So without further ado, I'll welcome my guest, the author of BigLies.org, and welcome Ray.
Yeah, hello. Are you hearing me?
You're coming through loud and clear, sir. Very good.
Jolly good. Thanks for your introduction and all the rest of it. Good. Let me situate myself here. I'm nuclize.org is the website to do with nuclear weapons, but there's also material on big-lies.org. Mm-hmm. And there are also some re-revisionist YouTubes, many of them on, more than 100 of them actually, but some of those are on the nuclear issue. And I've also got some Amazon reviews under the name of re-revisionist. Mm-hmm. And basically my background is in a combination of science, history, maths, things like that. Mm-hmm. Now, on 9/11, let me just say, the reason I'm here at all is because I found Simon Schack's website on 9/11, which is one of the best. I mean, he's obviously one of the leading people.
Yes.
And I agree with all your introduction. I've got maybe a slightly different view. I know about this BBC deliberate suppression of it, and mm-hmm. the original scene setting, you know, and the placement of actors, and the simulated victims, you know, and mm-hmm. the popular mechanics as a shill. And they had mm-hmm. a report too, didn't they? Like, the big report missing out all the important stuff. And there are various issues which are in common with the nuclear issue. For example, I'll try and give a few illustrations. One is, with all these fraudy things, you get some kind of bottleneck where the information is restricted. And with 9/11, I think they made a mistake because home computers were just at the stage where people could save evidence. So I think that they made a mistake. There's an awful lot of stuff has surfaced, including these predictions of the buildings falling before they fell, that kind of thing. And the money, as you mentioned, money is an issue. And, of course, there's the – you didn't mention it. There's the Silverstein insurance link in 9/11. And there's also the issue of a trigger event, you know. With Pearl Harbor, you had a few hundred deaths, or supposedly at any rate, and that's used as a justification for millions of war deaths, and that's an inbuilt kind of reflex which is played on, which could be criticized. There's also the issue of hoax maintenance. You know, if you've got a fraud running, in my view, for example, the moon landing is a fraud, you have the business mm-hmm. of maintaining it. You have to keep the publicity going. But at some point, you have to have an exit strategy as well. You have to have some way of fading it out. And all these things apply to the nuclear issue. Right. Let me just say, first of all, there are two issues. There's nuclear bombs and there's nuclear power.
Yes.
I think nuclear bombs are definitely a fake. Nuclear power, I think, is more doubtful, but I'm fairly sure that's a fake too.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as the history, this is the very last major so-called conspiracy theories I know of. The originator is a chap called Roger Desjardins, who's in Canada, who I seem to think was something to do with electric power, maybe to do with Niagara. And in 2005, according to my notes here, he was the first person to post skeptical stuff about nuclear weapons and nuclear power. It's quite good stuff, but it was kind of ignored, and he didn't set up his own website. And then in 2008, Jesse's video came out. His nickname was Nuclize in capitals, one word.
Okay.
And of course, there were lots of comments, a fair number of comments to that. Some of them very good. People like First Class Skeptic was very good. He's an American from the Midwest, I think. And there's a mm-hmm. French chap, and there's some people from around the world. And by 20, so slow this process, isn't it? By 2010, well, I put up some YouTubes myself based on DVDs. I did some research, you see. If you look at past nuclear test videos, I mean, they've been DVD'd now. Previously, they were only available on film, but there was some relaxation in policy in the late 90s. So you can get DVDs. I mean, you can examine them frame by frame, as mm-hmm. Jess pointed out in his video. But I did this myself. I found some things like birth year DVDs had material on nuclear testing in the 50s, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, they had fake stuff. And I put up some about 8 or so videos, all short ones. Instead, there's one with a 50-second insert, which was put into films at the time. It's 50 seconds, there's a kind of orchestra playing pulsating music, and there's a panning shot showing all kinds of explosions and something burning in the background, which is actually shown in negative form, you can check. And I put another version of that in negative form. It's clearly a fake. They clearly just got a whole lot of stuff, rigged it up, and pretended it's a nuclear explosion. And anyway, by 2011, an amazing length of time, 6 years after Roger Desjardins started this stuff, Jesse started his Nuclize Forum. Uh-huh. And that went for exactly a year, and then he seemed to have got cold feet or something. He suddenly pulled it. It might have been because he was annoyed with people taking it over from him. I don't know. Or it might have been because he was leaned on, because he was he had an apartment in New York. In fact, he was in New York on the very day of 9/11, and he sort of went out to have a look. So, you know, he was a skeptic about that. But he's kind of
That's what he says. But I'm pretty sure that most of the Lower Manhattan was cordoned off for I don't know how many days. So I doubt he can get too close to anything.
Oh, okay. Well, whatever. Anyway,
yeah, that's my feeling about that.
Okay. Anyway, after a year, 1 year sort of anniversary, he pulled it. All of a sudden, it suddenly vanished. But I'd sight grabbed it. Just to be honest, and I put it back. So the one there is frozen. It's just technically too difficult to allow people to add comments. And in any case, I got fed up with being one of the monitors of it, because you get an awful lot of spam and things. And you see now, so there you've got a thing which is fixed. It's been there now for another year. It's just had its first birthday again, this very moment, more or less.
Oh, is that right?
So,
okay.
Yeah, so it's an advantage in a way to have fixed stuff, because people can see exactly what's going on. There's no question of referring to, of not knowing what you're talking about. And so there it is, and it gets quite a reasonable number of hits. I mean, I get hundreds a day, although I don't know the exact figures, because you get this referrer spam, which kind of backs up the figures a bit. But
right.
If there are any viewers interested, look at nuclize.org, and you'll get the cover page, and it has links which are quite carefully designed to the rest of this site. You know, we split it into topics. One very obvious one, is Hiroshima and Nagasaki. So we've got a separate topic on that, showing that it wasn't A-bombed. I mean, it's got a whole lot of evidence pointing that way. And there are about 10 of these things altogether. I'll just briefly go through them, actually, so that people know.
I just want to get a little more background on how you came about this whole investigation. For instance, let's just go right back to 9/11/2001, which is the main reason I started my broadcast and my website. So,
yeah.
Where were you on 9/11/2001, and how did you receive the information from what was happening?
At that time, I was in. I was splitting up with somebody, so I paid no attention to it really. Although
Is that
I did
right?
assume from the, I was just doing other things, so I paid mm-hmm. no attention at the time. Although I never really believed it when I first, you know, I heard people commenting on it, and you know, I'd taken some interest in the design of skyscrapers. And they, have you any idea how much they weigh, the sheer volume of stuff in them? You know, it's like a mountain. The idea mm-hmm. that an aeroplane could crash into one and bring it down is manifest nonsense. It's just mm-hmm. not possible. Just on ordinary dynamic grounds, you know, the plane would just get crunched up and not cause much damage.
Right.
So I never took it very seriously. And the idea as a war, I'm quite happy with this idea that they use these things to generate wars, and I've had that view since the Vietnam War, because mm-hmm. I was a fan of Bertrand Russell. You know, one of my degree subjects was maths, and at that time Russell's books were available in bookshops. You could just wander around and get them, and I read all the way through his stuff. And there was a book of his called War Crimes in Vietnam, which was mm-hmm. a collection of essays. It was published when he was about 95 or something. And which had the same effect on me as the 9/11 thing has on 9/11 truth movement has on a lot of gullible Americans. I think, you know, it's a bit of a shock. So I've been alert to that kind of possibility for decades actually, and I have made some attempt to check out other things. For example, AIDS was one. I found some quite good people. You know, sometimes you contact people and they turn out to have a mixture of information. Some of it good, some of it bad.
So at what point did you do some research into 9/11 to dig into
some of the... I did very little on 9/11.
Okay.
My website, The Big Lies thing, gives a list of things on, for example, AIDS.
Yes.
And organophosphorus insecticides, which was a big issue in Britain. I don't know about here. They had these insecticides and they would pour them almost neat, you know, dangerous nerve toxin on cattle because they had warble flies. These flies would bury under the skin of the cattle and, you know, make their hides unsalable. Mm-hmm. So areas with warble flies, and of course all these areas had BSE, and there was a big movement to sort of cover up the obvious fact that BSE, mad cow disease, was caused by these organophosphorus insects. Anyway, I was interested in this kind of stuff. And NASA, I only became aware of NASA in 1999 when there was a TV program featuring David Percy, who's a photographer, on NASA. Very good program, actually. It's quite a surprise, considering it was a part of the Jewish media. I infer from that, in fact, that NASA is not a predominantly Jewish-funded thing. I think NASA is a sort of general science fraud. The 1997, the few years before that, I investigated this Holocaust thing because I was aware. You know, when I first heard of it, I was kind of shocked at the idea, as most people are. But I thought, because of things like the Vietnam War, that I could spend the time having a look into it. And of course, I'm quite happy that's a fake as well. It was just a money.
So you've always been a skeptic even before 9/11.
I'm irrational. I'm just interested in truth, and there just happens at this moment in history, there just happens to be an exceptional amount of lies going around. Or at least I hope it's exceptional. Maybe it's not. It might be.
So you've always questioned things. If you don't want to use the word skeptic, you've always questioned what you're told.
I like to know what's going on. I mean, but I'm not. I find it quite difficult to find to justify new stuff. Really, I mean, I don't think I would have stumbled across this nuke thing spontaneously. I think if I hadn't been told about it. And the trigger hadn't been put there for me to investigate, I'm not sure I would have inferred it from first principles. You know, I think like most people, I would have just accepted it.
Yeah.
So you need a certain amount of impetus to get to start you going, don't you? I mean, I presume you
absolutely.
Found that. Yeah. I mean, what was your 9/11 thing? You must have had something that suddenly started you off after 10 years.
Well, I said at the intro that I was reading about how the IRS was going after Americans all around the world to file income tax returns. And that aggressive nature puzzled me and startled me. And for some reason, I decided to look into that. And I stumbled upon 9/11 again. And it was just a couple YouTube videos that... really, mainly loose change, actually.
But without those videos, presumably you wouldn't have come across it.
No, not at all.
There are some people. I mean, it is possible, I think, if you... I did wonder if you couldn't write a computer program which would do a bit of data mining and look for things which arouse fear and suspicion and money and kind of flag up likely ones. But even if that had happened, even if I'd got a thing which said, you know, 5 stars, look at nuclear weapons as a suspect item, I don't think I would have got that. But anyway, that's so all credit to these people who started it. But as I say, it's the latest one in all these conspiracy ideas that I know of. It started in 2005. And so it's really by some of these other ones are, you know, decades older. So it's got some time to catch up. Okay, let me just go through the front page of Nucleus. I've got, there are 10 or 11 separate forums. The first one's a welcome one, right? Mm-hmm. And the idea of that is just to get newbies into it. And the way these things are arranged is you have an information thing at the top, which is fixed, and you can have stickers. And with all these ones, I've tried to put links in so that if you click on the information page, there's a list of other pages with information about them, so you can look through it and think, oh, this looks interesting, and so on. But I've also included material about trolls and liars and stuff in that welcome page. And also, incidentally, there's a group called the Natural Philosophy Alliance, which is a group of alternative physicists, and not one of them, as far as I know, has commented on this stuff. It's kind of disappointing, really. You get knowledge islands, you know, you get people isolated. And although these people are theoretically into alternative physics, they don't. None of them have commented.
That's interesting.
It's odd, isn't it? On my Big Lies site, I've got a section on modern physics, which was actually written about 10 years ago, which was before I knew that nukes were a fake. And that includes some quite interesting stuff on relativity and so on, which is part of the underpinning of the nuke idea, as is the Big Bang. A lot of these things hang together. Anyway, part two of the second forum is current events, and of course that's mostly 2012, and there's stuff on Iran there, and Breivik, you know, in Norway, the alleged killer chap. There's stuff about Fukushima, and also Alex Jones, who, I don't know if you've heard of the theory, that he's really that comedian, reborn. Forgotten his name. Doesn't really matter. Anyway,
he's a comedian that's reborn? That's a new one to me.
Alex Jones. Who was that comedian? He was a stage chap. You'd recognize his name if I could remember it. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
Andy Kaufman?
No. It's on section two anyway. And then you've got two sections on the nuclear scams in the past. Okay. Now, if the atom bomb is a fake, then you've got to invent properties for it. You've got to invent what it should do. And in fact, they're a bit unimaginative, you know. I mean, it should have, if you've got a thing which gets to really high temperatures, you should have all kinds of odd properties. For example, the air should completely, not just ionize, but it should kind of separate into its components. And you should end up with things like, you know, those plasma balls where you get electrical kind of lightning flashing around. You should get something like that. But in fact, the best they could come up with is just these, something like napalm. You can see, looking at the pictures, that it's just a hydrocarbon explosion, basically.
That's pretty interesting. So that's under the
nuclear scams past, I put there. I've tried, it's very difficult to get these things condensed properly, but you know, nuke scams past, funds wars, hoax maintenance, the Manhattan Project, of course, is important, and then you've got the Cold War, the so-called atom spies, and things like the neutron bomb. A lot of that is fakery. I mean, I think, for example, that Vanunu was just a shill.
Who's Vanunu?
Oh, Vanunu. Sorry, Mordecai Vanunu. He's an Israeli from, I think it's Morocco or Algeria. He's one of about six or eight siblings, and he was, I forget when the date was, but it was announced in the Jewish press that Israel has been proved to have nuclear weapons. The reason for that was it had to be done that way because the US can't legally deal with countries which are not, signed up to some nuclear treaties or other. So you see, from my point of view, Israel doesn't have nuclear weapons. It's a complete fake. So Vanunu was a kind of stooge to pretend that they had nuclear weapons and also keep the US trading with them, dealing with them, right? And so, I mean, that's quite an interesting aspect. He was supposed to be put in solitary confinement, in fact, although, you see, that's another ideal thing. You can't tell if somebody's in solitary, can you? I imagine he was never actually there. And I think 18 years later, they said he was allowed out, and they all said, oh, he's in very good condition for somebody who's been in
I'm just looking on the forum here. You're definitely one of the major contributors on the forum. So most of this is your research, really.
I'll go into that in a minute. I'll list the people who were popular, who did valuable stuff. After I'll just go through this introduction to what's on here. There's yes. the nucleus comes to the past. It also includes things like the Einstein letter to Roosevelt, which looks fishy, and things like supposed nukes in India and China and so on. And also some quite interesting stuff about atom spies. At the time, it was all noticed that these atom spies were all Jewish, and I interpret that as being pretending that the USSR had nuclear weapons, and in that way, it wouldn't be, there's no risk of it being invaded, you see, because there were, at that time, there was some democratic push in the USA, and it's quite possible they might have invaded the USSR, but there was a kind of Jewish layer in both the USSR and in the USA, and so I'm perfectly happy that all these atom spies were just a fake to make it look as though Stalin had these things, despite the unlikeliness of it, you see, because they're supposed to be hugely expensive, and the USSR had just been through a devastating war, quite apart from the devastation caused by the so-called Communist Party. Anyway, so, you know, that's stuff in the past, including the Manhattan Project, which, by the way, I don't know if you know this, the radar research was supposed to have used up even more money than the Manhattan Project.
The Manhattan Project alleges that over 100,000 people, scientists, were working on the invention of the nuclear bomb. Is that correct?
It's something like that. They certainly milked it for money. There's no question. I mean, that's another argument which would appeal to some people about there not being an atom bomb. I mean, if it costs, it was proven that firebombing could destroy. I mean, most of Europe, most of
Japan,
Germany had been firebombed, hadn't it? And so had most of Japan. And if you can firebomb towns for like $1 million, why spend 100,000 million or something on another bomb? It's just from that point of view, it's a silly.
That's another defense mechanism, a plausible deniability, as they call it, excuse for that there was no denying there's a nuclear bomb, because they said 100,000 people worked on it. So how could they all keep quiet? That's always a big excuse.
Normally the number of people involved is quite small, isn't it, with these things, the actual critical people. Anyway, there's also material there. The fourth option here, the nuke scams in the future, is about the exit strategy, because all this stuff is getting more widely known, and they have to either pretend that it never happened. Well, I mean, you see, from their point of view, the best thing to do is to say that they're decommissioning these things, and then say, you know, that they're right, they're all been got rid of now. But they also have the problem that you know, somebody could say, well, why anybody can just rebuild another one. And so you have to have people who say they're not as bad as they thought they were. And there are several examples there. There's a place called the Monterey Institute, for example, which has a ridiculous video saying with implausible arguments, such as that you know, no time in history has blowing up an entire city been a conclusive event in war. I mean, it's complete rubbish, actually.
Is that on the stuff. I'm just looking at the topics there. Where's the I see. Ward Wilson, Monterey Institute, Exit Strategy of Nuke Fraud. Okay, this is fascinating.
Yeah, that's right. There's in that little group, there's Chosudovsky. He's a sort of, well, you might know him. He's in Canada. He's a Canadian kind of equivalent.
Never heard of
Chomsky.
Oh, Chomsky, yeah.
Well, Chosudovsky is the sort of Canadian Chomsky.
No, I've never heard of him.
Well, it doesn't really matter. He's just another one of these. They're all liars, basically. And there's a book by Richard Rose. That's another interesting thing that, you know, the people who read books are not that common. They're not that high a proportion of the population. So what publishers do is they look back at their lists, they look at what was popular 20 or 30 years ago, and see if they can do something similar. And Richard Rose wrote a book. I haven't read it. I gave good reasons why it's not worth reading, because if somebody writes about this subject and doesn't include information about fake tests, you just have to assume that they're a
part of
it. They've been hired to do it, you know.
Yeah.
So anyway, then we have the section on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Now, some of that is very good. A lot of that stuff was by First Class Skeptic, and he did internet burrowing around, and he discovered, for example, that the very widely known stuff, in a way, that the with the bombs at the time, bomb accuracy at the time, they couldn't possibly have got even within, you know, even within Hiroshima, they couldn't be sure of bombing it at all.
Mm-hmm.
There's some mention about Ferriby. Ferriby was the chap who did the, who was supposed to have set the bomb release mechanism. And there's stuff about radiation stories, and they haven't made up, they obviously didn't make up their minds, because obviously you'd expect to get some radiation. And the initial stories were made up on that basis. But later on, if you look at any recent research, there's no evidence whatever of radiation. There's no radiation damage, no genetic damage, nothing like that. Mm-hmm. And First Class Skeptic also looked at the Enola Gray crew. They were not the normal crew of that time. And almost certainly they didn't even take photos. The photographer left his camera behind, that sort of thing. There's also interesting stuff about the propaganda. For example, Hersey, there was a report in the New Yorker in 1946, because that's a long time after the supposed bombing. There's a free issue of the New Yorker full of stuff about the supposed atom bomb with all the, you know, all the gruesome stuff. And of course, mm-hmm. if you have gruesome stuff, people tend not to read it carefully. It's just kind of unpleasant to read. And in fact, I found another book in my collection of books, which I sometimes collect books just even if I can't see any obvious point of them. There's a book with an introduction by Bertrand Russell, a collection of essays by school kids in Hiroshima, mm-hmm. edited by a bloke called Asada. I think they had some Japanese contest, you know, competition for school kids, and this book was published about 10 years later, I think. And again, you see, if you read these without being clued up on it, they do. There's all this stuff about things burning and, you know, people, you know, skin falling off and things, and bright flashes of light and stuff. Mm-hmm, if you're not mm-hmm. clued up to it, it reads as though it could be an atom bomb if you don't read it carefully. But if you do read it carefully, you see that it's just consistent with firebombing. I mean, for mm-hmm. example, you get all the stuff. There's a girl in there who was like 600 yards away from the supposed epicenter. And there was a sort of something happened. She opened the door and looked out, and there were all these burning buildings. This was supposed to be virtually where the bomb went off. And
those buildings shouldn't have been burning. They should have been gone, incinerated.
They should have been leveled. Well, so should she. Right. Yeah, exactly. And
demolecularized.
Or something unpleasant, anyway. Yeah. And, well, this is one of the points made in Jess Ward's video, of course, that if you look at Amsterdam after bombing, or any of these towns, Tokyo mm-hmm. is another one. It looked just the same as Hiroshima. All the, you know, the wooden buildings had been burnt and were flattened, but all the stone stuff was still there, and the windows broken and things. This was a thing about photography. Sorry, carry on. Yeah.
No, I was just saying, I want to make sure we're all on the right page. I'm on the Nukalize forum, which is Nuke Scam Future, Covert Exit Strategies and Secret Plans to Phase Out Nuke Frauds. We're still discussing some of the topics there, right? I just want to make sure, because
right.
you made some references that if I want to read about.
It's the one below that. The next forum is Hiroshima and Nagasaki, not a.
Oh, you already, okay, you moved down already.
Yeah. Yeah, sorry, yeah, okay, I'm not making that very clear. There's a red thing there, which I inserted later. This was after the thing was frozen. Somebody found, there's a photo supposedly rediscovered in Hiroshima showing two separate kinds. If you look at the picture of the atom bomb, there's a well-known picture with Oppenheimer posing beside it. If you look mm-hmm. at it, it's perfectly obvious once you look for it. It's two separate clouds. They'd obviously filmed it. There were two separate ammunition dumps or something big.
So we're now okay. So we're on the topic World War II Japan - proofs yep. that Hiroshima and Nagasaki were not A-bombed, and the second topic is what you're talking about that was added in 2013.
I'm not used to broadcasting, but it's fine.
And I'm not used to hosting either. Today I'm half asleep at the wheel. So
the listeners are not used to listening to this kind of stuff either. So
yeah, nobody's used to anything. We have to know that most people are listening to this after the fact, so they really need directions as to where to go.
Okay.
So you've got a topic called Hiroshima, newly found photo showing two clouds, and
yes,
that came out of the Daily Telegraph.
I just nicked it from there. yes, copied it from their telegraph. It's supposed to be. There was very heavy censorship in Japan after the Second World War, and I imagine they rounded up most of these things. There are museum exhibits actually in Hiroshima, and once you clued up to it, they resemble these Holocaust ones. Actually, they're obviously very carefully picked out of not very many samples, and you can see for yourself that. I think the Hiroshima Museum is probably online, and you can judge the usefulness of the exhibits from that. Anyway, that's so much for the Hiroshima. I draw attention to that because obviously one of the first things people tend to say is, "Well, what about Hiroshima? Do you tell that to the Japanese?" You know, as though you wouldn't have thought of that. That's one of the reasons I was more keen on this early morning broadcast, because otherwise you're likely to get deluged by people who do a sort of knee-jerk reply. Okay.
Well, actually, most of the people that listen to this show are completely wide open to fraud and fakery. Most of the people, one of the disadvantages or advantages, whatever way you want to look at it, is we speak to the converted. We preach to the converted here already. So it's very unlikely we have anyone that joins in to our calls that is skeptical about any of this, because most of them are completely on board with 9/11 being a psychological operation, complete media fakery. So we usually just commiserate on the latest media fakery. So
okay, maybe I'm just.
I haven't found anyone in some of the people I've listened to and talk that are as well versed as you are on this nuclear fakery. So that's why I wanted to have you on, because
I did spend a couple of years on it.
You've really blown the lid off this, in my opinion. This is fascinating stuff. So why I wanted to have you on, because you really dug deep into this. And to me, this is one of the biggest weapons they have to manipulate and move people to a different. To their way of thinking, the nuclear.
It's also very flexible, isn't it? I mean, if you look at Iran, they suddenly produce it out of a bag, as it were. You know, they're going to as an excuse. So it's a very flexible weapon as well.
Well, if you want to get people to listen to you, if you're a controlling government, you just use this weapon as a tool any which way you want. And part of our discovery is we've all decided, most of us, that the real enemy of governments are its people. So we're not really at war with Iran. The people that rule over us are at war with us, in the sense that they are manipulating us using some of these clubs, like the nuclear club,
I was going to say, I don't know what your view is on this. And you may not like it, but I adopt this view, that the McDonald view, that there's a hostile Jewish elite at the moment who are basically funded by paper money. You know, their source is the legal power of paper money, and that's the source of the problems. By the way, on the subject of speed of people reacting, isn't this Sandy Hook thing was remarkably fast, wasn't it? I mean, only within a couple of weeks, there are videos and...
Definitely. And as it is, not to get too diverted, but as that came out, I think the minute it came out, most of the people that that we convene with on a weekly basis were pretty much calling that one a new psyop. So
you just take it for granted.
For sure. Yeah, absolutely. And I think even some of the people that I converse with on a weekly basis, I think one of them set up a website, sandyhoax.com, just to attract people that are searching for those terms. And he captured a lot of people that were just if people are smart enough to type in the word Sandy Hook hoax, as long as you add the word hoax, then you're going to uncover this vein of information. Just like if you type in nuclear hoax, you're going to get to your site. So people are cluing into the whole media fakery, the hoaxing, quite quickly now. So I agree with you that it's going to be far more difficult for them to pull off these psychological operations. But I think the main thing I want to impress upon people is... we all understand the role of fakery, because everyone, most North Americans, since they don't have as much to do anymore, like movies. And they understand Hollywood. So they understand the concept of something not being real. That's why they go to the movie theater. But they just can't make the link between stuff that's fake for entertainment and stuff that's fake for control. So once they understand that Hollywood is being used to manipulate them into separating them from their tax dollars and to making them do things that are evil and making the United States become an aggressor around the world, then they'll realize that there's more to it, more to anything that they're told is news. So
yeah, I don't know how sophisticated people are as regards Hollywood. In fact, there was an interesting passage in Kevin McDonald's site on a TV series called All in the Family. It's an American one. Apparently, it's based on a British one called Till Death Us Do Part. And the idea of that is basically to ridicule whites. But I'm not sure that most people watching it would have kind of picked up the message. I think some of the messages, particularly the Jewish-related stuff, are quite subtle. I mean, there was an example with the time of, what was that film called? The China Syndrome. That was at the time round about Three Mile Island?
Yes.
Not 2 Mile or 4 Mile. But I mean, I think that was a preparatory thing in preparation for the hoax. Anyway, let me just get back to this page here.
Yeah, you mentioned 3 Mile Island as opposed to 2 and 4. Did you deliberately say that just because you're... What was your reason for that?
I can't remember. Is it 3 Mile Island? I don't remember what the...
No, it is 3 Mile Island. It's and we know that numerology is part of the manipulation where they deliberately pick numbers like 3 to...
Yeah. My attitude to these things like that. I mean, you see, Jess War was very keen on strange, you know, codes in buildings, that kind of thing, and weird symbolism, and I don't take that stuff very seriously. I think it's a bit of a blind. But anyway.
No, it is a distraction, but who is it for? There are most religious people, of course, believe in symbolism, and numerology is huge when it comes to creating religious stories that people believe. So when people can see numbers that represent and that have been put before them in their religious studies, they make an extra connection. So
I mean, like a trinity or something?
Yes, absolutely. So
actually, the
magic
first
numbers
test was called Trinity, wasn't it?
Of course. When you're trying to move a herd, when you're trying to move the herd, the great herd that is the people of the world, you have to get them to be able to identify psychologically with what you're talking about. So all of this is psychological manipulation. So the whole nuclear thing we're talking about is, to me, is a psyop. The military has created this story, this hoax, and they lace it with a lot of religious references to get people that are religiously dispositioned to buy into it, because they see patterns in their brains that they can identify with. So when you talk about Three Mile Island and the Trinity test,
well,
it's all part of it.
Interestingly, the reason the Trinity test was at night was to make it seem brighter. I mean, the theory was that these things would be brighter than 1,000 suns. You remember that phrase? Brighter than 1,000 suns. In fact, it was impossible then. It still is now, I think, to get an explosion which would be brighter than the sun. So they did them at night to make it look impressive.
Do you agree with the concept of psyop or psychological operation? This is more than just media
fakery. I think you're
missing
an extremely important point here, and the extremely important point is this vision of between Jews and the rest of the world. I think it's perfectly possible that most military people believed in atom bombs, but also that they were duped by a collection of Jews. I mean, I remember some phone-in program, and it was stated that all of the atom bomb installations and all the nuclear power installations are serviced by Jewish companies. So if there is any secrecy, that would all be sort of within the family, and you're ignoring that very, very important issue.
Right. Well, I'm not ignoring it, but...
Well, okay. Let me just go on here. We had to hear... This shows how it takes time to think of things. There's a short section here on bogus test sites, you know, like the Bikini, Marshall Islands, that kind of thing. And it's only there's only three topics there, if you look, because it took us a long time to think of that. It's such an obvious point, and yet we never really got around to it. But if you look at those sites using Google and so on, you know, it's not consistent with vast amounts of radiation and so on, or vast explosions. Anyway, the next part is about nuclear power. Now, it's separate.
Oh, hold on. Let's not skip over too quickly. I just want to make sure people know where we are. We're on the Nuclize forum, and you are on... You just talked about topic number 6, bogus A-bomb and H-bomb tests, Bikini and Marshall Islands. So what is the main point you wanted to make about that?
The main point really was that even after a year, we'd only just got around to thinking about it. There was some tests in Australia, there was another one. All we were going to do there was investigate what evidence there was for them being test sites. And if you look, there isn't any. It's consistent with just being rigged up. But one of the interesting points there is just simply the fact that it took a long time to get around to it. You know, whenever you've got a topic, there are all these threads, and some of the reason that two heads are better than one in this case, or a number of heads is better than one, is because, of course, you can all pursue separate little courses and knit things together. So that particular thing is a bit disappointing. There's not much there. But the next one is nuclear power doubts, and that's really quite an interesting one. Okay. Nuclear power. And shall I explain this dump load thing? I explained it to you.
Oh, definitely. Absolutely. Well, yeah, we move on from bombs to power. This is a big thing, and actually I'm really on board with this. This is fascinating to me. So.
All right. Well, there are two views on what nuclear power stations really are. One is a dump load, and another one, which is newer, is the use as to get rid of toxic waste underground. And for example, thorium power. There's a lot of talk about thorium power recently, which was an idea by Edward Teller, who I think died just after it. And Teller, of course, is one of these hoaxers on a large scale. He's just basically a liar, Jewish liar. Teller, along with Herman Kahn, there's a whole lot of these people. And so I'll just dispose of that. Really, the idea if you look at it, you'll see they have an underground thing which is supposed to generate electricity. But it would be ideal for banging toxic stuff down. And I think probably this is a cover for that. There's certainly some... In northwest England, there's a proposal to put supposed nuclear waste underground. I think it's just a way of disposing of toxic stuff, of which there's quite a lot. However, the dump... I'll try and explain dump loads. If you've got a battery or a source of power... and it's powering things, they have to sort of match up, you know. If there's too much voltage or amps or whatever, then the thing will sort of blow up. If there's too little, it won't work properly. And most people don't realize this. I mean, if you turn a light switch on or turn on a microwave or something or any other electrical appliance, it's all balanced out for you by the people working at the power station. And people collectively, you know, there isn't much variation if everybody turns things on and off at random kind of thing. You've got a fairly constant power. So there's no problem with matching. You know, you fire up your power station or keep it going all the time. And some power stations go online and some go off. And there are other storage systems as well, like flywheels, for example. You can get one. If you have a really big flywheel, it's amazing how much energy it can store. But there's a problem of uneven use of power.
And how does a flywheel store power, by the way? Is it just does it literally wind up and then you unwind it later?
Well, it's the same sort of procedure as a dynamo. In one case, if you've got electricity you want to store, you feed it in and the thing is caused to rotate faster. And then conversely, you can extract power from it by when it runs down. But the amount of energy in them is really considerable. If it's a hefty, great big thing, it takes a lot to move it.
So the bottom line is that most people don't realize that electricity is not like water or gas. You cannot put it in a tank and draw it out as you need it later. So when you need the production has to meet the use within a few seconds.
Yeah, that's true. And you need, you know, whenever people don't realize there's a power station, they think electricity has been clean, but of course there's a generator at the other end of it. Let me give you this example, which I'm quite fond of, which applies in I know it applies in Britain in particular, and no doubt in America. If there's a big ball game, football game, something like that, it's on TV, they typically, you know, you have a break halfway through it or something. And during that break, a large number of people go and make coffee or tea, right? So you might have 2 or 3 million kettles going on. In Britain, these are like 3 kilowatts or something. So that's six gigawatts of electricity all suddenly demanded. And that's equivalent to a whole power station, you know, the power station or two. There's some calculations on the website. It's at least the same as the biggest power station that ever existed, something like that. just to switch on.
Where's the post on your site that calculates it? Is that in this forum?
Yeah, if you click on the nuclear power doubts, nuclear disasters, there's a collection of separate items, and the dump load one is right at the top. It's in the information section.
So that's where you've done your calculation and illustration.
Yeah, so there's an explanation which is on the same lines as I'm saying here. But anyway, in order to even out, you have a dump load. You just have, they know you pick a sort of maximum needed, and the rest of it just goes to waste. It sounds a criminal waste of electricity, doesn't it? You have a great big thing to boil water, and that uses up the electricity. And then when all these people's kettles come online, you switch off your dump load or turn it down, and so nobody notices that all the power is balanced out. And the theory of the skeptics is that nuclear power, they're just dump loads. There may be some experimental stuff in it, but basically all they do is not generate electricity. And according to the originator of all this, according to Roger Desjardins, there have been plenty of power cuts, although they're connected up to a nuclear power station, and he regards it as conclusive evidence. They don't actually generate any power at all. And if you look into the details of that, for example, France is often quoted, it was quoted by you, in fact, France is often quoted as being as having vast numbers of nuclear power.
France is supposed to be 80% nuclear.
Yeah, I think it's just hooked into Germany. If you look on that site, you'll see that Germany is abandoning nuclear power altogether. I think they've twigged that people are realizing it, so it'll be faded out. All these people who want to build new nuclear power stations ought to check that it does actually generate nuclear power. They won't. I mean, technically, these people are pretty useless.
I've explained this a couple times because I think it's pretty fascinating. And the way I've explained it is like this, and I used your kettle analogy, that there electricity has to come from somewhere once it's called upon. So when you plug in the equivalent of a power station, say at a halftime event in a football or American football game, you need to get the power from somewhere. So if you need an entire power plant's worth of power, well, there's nowhere in the grid that can ramp up to that to meet that need within a few seconds.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right.
So what you're
if they
what
could,
I think
you need one.
Yeah, what I think you've said is that the grid is always overpowered at all times to a certain percent. Now we know we can't overpower too much because, well, I guess, let's just say it's 20% or even 25% overpowered. So, because of that fact, when people aren't plugging in their kettle, that extra power has to go somewhere. And we're told, at least where I live, that when we have excess power, we just have connected grids with the United States, so we just sell it to them. And it just goes down to them, and we actually pay them. We are told here, we pay the other grids to take our electricity.
I think that's incredible, isn't it? Yeah, I think that's true.
Yeah.
From Niagara, you mean?
Yeah, well, yeah, we pay them to take our electricity. So, in other words, the power, you can look on our websites in our area where they show you the cost per kilowatt at in real time. So they're saying they've put out stories where for certain hours the price per kilowatt is a negative number. In other words, we pay other their line is we pay other grids or grid management systems in the United States to take our power. Now, they don't ever say what they're doing with our power, because presumably if we send all that excess power to them, they have to use it. Now, why they would be using it, why they would need it, rather, is just a suspect. Although they could just say that they turned down some of their plants, I suppose. But the bottom line is, with this excess power, it has to be dumped somewhere. So you're suggesting that instead of producing power, nuclear power plants are just waste stations where they receive the power and they convert it to heat.
Which typically, yeah, into steam. It could be local heating, couldn't it, I suppose. But if you have a cooling tower, that would be ideal. There's a video, actually, on YouTube of an abandoned nuclear power station in, I can't remember, it was Elmer or something. And if you look at it, it's just a great big tower. Obviously, it's a cooling tower.
So in other words, they have a big pool of water, which they claim is for cooling the nuclear material, or not cooling it. I guess they have. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's right. Yeah, the interior of a building would be like that. I mean, it would look very similar to what you've been told as a nuclear generator. In other words, you'd have water and you'd have a whole load of little sort of coily things or units, which is cylindrical units, and of course that's entirely consistent with being like a kettle that generates water. And of course if the water runs out, you've got a problem, because you get a huge amount of electricity going into it. I suspect that's probably what happened to Chernobyl. It just overheated. It'd be like having 100,000 electric fires all blazing away at once, something like that. That's quite an interesting issue anyway. Now, to follow that up, you see, when you follow these up, you have to follow certain trains of thought, and one of them is independent nuclear power, like submarines. You know, we had very long discussions about whether so-called nuclear submarines are in fact nuclear powered. And I mean, submarines have existed since the First World War, and they were perfectly viable then, and in the Second World War as well. So there's no obvious reason for using nuclear power. And I suspect, I'm fairly happy that that's a hoax as well. And I mean, there are very few nuclear submarines. There were I forget the figures, but I mean, certainly not in the hundreds. There's like a dozens of them. And that was an easy thing to fake. You know, you could just have a few people in the know with them. We looked at nuclear submarines, and there's a big, long discussion on it. You can have a look at it. It's quite interesting, really.
And where is that? And
that's in that nuclear-powered doubt section.
Okay.
Yeah.
And, of course, the logical question one might ask is, if nuclear power is so dangerous, how can you have people literally sleeping and working so close to it? A nuclear submarine is a very small area. So.
That's right. I think one of the reasons was probably because they wanted to, in order to make nuclear weapons look even more dangerous, you had to have them mobile. Otherwise, somebody could say, well, why not just bomb the main installations? And so nuclear submarines they're supposed to have been able to launch nuclear missiles. You know, that's another problem. If you think about a missile launch, I think a lot of those, they might have been faked as well, because if you imagine the technical difficulties of getting a thing launched from underwater at the sort of speed needed to get it up through the water and past, and also be directed. I remember this was before microelectronics, there was no precision guiding system. Mm-hmm. So I think the nuclear submarines and nuclear missiles were a fake that sort of went together as part of the Cold War and part of the money-making system as well. But anyway, another issue about nuclear power is you'd expect it to occur in places where it's difficult to get conventional power supplies, right?
Yes.
I mean, Antarctica is a perfect example. Antarctica, you're not going to run a cable from Australia to, you know, across the ocean to Antarctica. So that would be an ideal place for nuclear power. So I looked up I did a little search on nuclear power, and there was an attempt supposedly made on a thing that never worked. And if you look at the installations, you can see there are these great big fuel containers, because obviously you need a lot of heat if you're going to live in the Antarctic. So that's another example, is that these standalone things don't seem to exist, although there's the possible exception of very small ones in...
Is that your post-nuclear power in Antarctica planned future?
Yeah.
Or planned failure?
Planned failure, that's right, yeah.
I get a laugh at that. I get a laugh at that, by the way, because you quoted an article, and I don't want to get too diverted into the numerology, but one of the ways that I detect fakery is again, they insert numbers that are all occultic. And here you go again. I'm just looking at this article. It's bizarre. A 1.8 megawatt nuclear power station, 1 plus 8 is 9, 11,000 cubic meters, there's your 11. So... These are very simple signs they insert into these stories to indicate it's all baloney.
It's entirely possible. One of the comments made by David Percy about NASA is that he thought a lot of these photos had deliberate fakery inserted by people making them at the time, who were sort of pissed off with misleading people. And if you look on my... YouTube videos, there's a six-part thing about NASA.
Yeah.
At that time, you know, they only allowed 10 minutes maximum, so it had to split into six. I've put comments on this as well. Anyway,
well, we're big on that as well, and NASA's complete fakery, but you don't have to do any convincing here. We just did a show last week on the International Space Station, so
really,
they're telling you that it's fake. That's part of their MO. It's part of their sort of twisted way of fakery. They always have to explain in plain sight what they're doing, but most people don't listen because they're not predispositioned to being lied to in a big way. So it's kind of hilarious, really, for all us that follow that. So
there's another issue related to atom bombs, which is to do with land clearance, actually, which this looking at Fukushima reminded me of it. Did you know that Japan gave their highest possible civilian award, the chrysanthemum or something, to the bomber, the chap who bombed Japan? And I think because it's a good point made by Roger Desjardins.
Who dropped to who? What are we talking about here? Who?
Bomb? Who's the famous bomber command in the U.S. in 1945?
Oh, you mean the one that dropped the bomb on Nagasaki or Hiroshima?
No, not the sort of strategic control chap. The equivalent of Bomber Harris. Anyway, he was given an award by the Japanese after the war, and.
For what?
Roger Desjardins' his interpretation was that there was a land clearance scheme. I think, possibly, that Japan was in transition between a sort of feudal samurai kind of aristocracy.
Right.
And the sort of American-style money aristocracy. If they could clear the land, burn it all out, get rid of the people, then you've got a lot of... building land all for yourself,
I understand. Well, yeah, I absolutely agree that a lot of the disasters, including even Hurricane Katrina, was used as a land clear. Now, I'm not saying the hurricane didn't happen, but I'm saying the damage that we're told happened was probably a lot of it was manufactured, and certain levees and dikes were deliberately kept broken just to clear out waterfront property to get people off that you normally wouldn't be able to buy out or force out. So they use that. I absolutely agree. And we could even speak to Chernobyl to being the same thing. I don't think Chernobyl happened in any way as we're being told, whether... And you intimated that perhaps that as a electric load dump it went awry, but I don't believe that either. I believe that it was completely orchestrated to just generate fear, number one, and swindle money, number two, and number three, because these PSYOPs are multi-purpose, to do a massive urban land clear. So
it's not impossible, is it? I don't know if the land around there is particularly valuable.
I don't even know. Yeah, I don't know the original makeup of the land or what it was being used for, but...
There's a similar possibility with London, in the Great Fire of London. This was after Cromwell allowed Jews back into Britain, and it's perfectly possible that there was a land clearance scheme so the stone Bank of England building could go back up, along with the Christopher Wren's Cathedral, you know, as part of the sort of Anglo-Jewish thing which was arguably taking shape. But so that's an interesting thing, which I think... There's another thing related to fake photos, that if you look at pictures of the London Blitz, there's a photo of St. Paul's Cathedral surrounded by clouds of debris from bombing. And I think that was a fake, if you look at that carefully. It's an obvious thing to do if you're you want to produce a photo for Time Life, or whatever it was, these things I had at the time. It's quite easy to fake smoke. You just get a bit of developing solution and cotton wool and rub it around, so you can do quite a nice image of a St. Paul's Cathedral surrounded by smoke. Anyway,
I just want to take a quick break here, Ray, and let people know what they're listening to here. You're listening to Wake Up with Ab. On this show, we talk about the biggest media hoax of our time, 9/11, and all the children she spawned since then. You can call us at 518-907-4904 or at Skype, contact ab.arato99. We're streaming 24 hours a day from radio.abarato.info, the same place you can find all of our archives. The show is usually live Saturdays at 8 p.m., but we may live broadcast any evening time as guests become available. Don't miss these shows by signing up at radio.abarato.info to be notified by email. Now, on with the show. All right, welcome back. This is episode 35, Hello. Ray and Revisionist of big-lies.org and nukelies.org is my guest today. He's calling over from England, and we're discussing the nuclear hoax. Both of us are in agreement that there's probably no such thing as nuclear weapons, as we are told. And by extension, nuclear energy is probably a massive hoax and a massive money swindle. Because whenever they try and build one over here, the figures are always in the billions. And also, they always never come in even close to budget. They're usually over budget by multiples of 2 and 3. So it's hard to understand why, since all we're talking about is pipes and concrete and a turbine, how they can't possibly get them done on time. But because nuclear power is almost like an occult mystery substance, they really can say whatever they want about it, because who is going to dispute anybody on what they're talking about? And they use the old scientific wall where they can easily say, well, you don't understand because you're not a nuclear scientist. Well, most people have two eyes and a brain and can see and reason when it comes to numbers. So when they create this illusory, this mystical substance called nuclear power, it's easy to erect a wall to keep people out and keep people out of the discussion. So I just find the whole thing fascinating. And go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, do you have much of a science background? We could look at the next section here, because obviously I'm quite anxious to include proper science.
Everything.
All right, well, look at the next section.
I want to keep going. So we're going to move out of the nuclear power section.
I thought, it's been an hour and 20 minutes so far. Let's look at science, nuclear physics, astronomy, and space travel. And that includes bombs and missiles as well. If we click on it, here we've got, there's some interesting stuff. Yeah, very interesting. Very good.
Go ahead.
Okay, well, there's so much to do. The Color of Nukes, that's a very good piece. I recommend that for people who want to dive into okay. this kind of stuff. First Class Skeptic looked online and got the most popular picture image of a supposed nuclear explosion. There's a lot of discussion there about, you know, things like color, temperature, and so on. But basically, you can see that it's a carbon-based, it's a hydrocarbon-type flame. The color mm-hmm. is too low. The color temperature is too low for a nuclear explosion, which should, in any case, be instantaneous. So that's quite a good general-purpose skepticism piece.
Yeah, I'm looking at the first picture, and I don't want to sound too crude about it, but I think part of the games that they play are mind games, and all this is a psychological operation. And I think that the most common nuclear blast picture, and this is no different, is to be in the shape of a phallic symbol. I think that's all part of the bullshit.
I think so.
Have you ever discussed that or thought of that? The so-called mushroom cloud is really just a representative of a phallus.
They made a mistake with the mushroom cloud, actually. That was a mistake caused by one of the people who dropped the alleged bombs. I mean, when they'd come back from what presumably was a firebombing raid, they had to make up a story. The original story was that it was not a mushroom at all. It was a sort of a stringer, a thing which went up just as a column. Which sounds more phallic, but I think they got stuck with this. They got stuck with this mushroom cloud by a mistake. It's in one of the earlier sections. That's mm-hmm. worth looking up. Actually, that's part of the whole, you know, origin of the myth, the shape and size of it. That's certainly worth looking at. But the phallic thing. See, originally it was two separate clouds, and so people looked at this. They must have been a bit puzzled. So a lot of cartoonists show a thing that's broken in the middle, you know, with another cloud around it or something, because it's an attempt to make the official picture look compatible with what people believe, what people could see. Anyway, there's another one here about space travel, which is quite interesting. There is a school of thought that space travel is virtually impossible, but I think they're wrong. I think you can launch things, but they can't be very heavy. Because mm-hmm. for technical reasons, you know, there's a limit to what you can get with a rocket. I've did some quite elaborate calculations there, partly taken out of a maths textbook, which was published more or less at the time, which explains, for example, why you have to have three-stage rockets rather than just one to get rid of the some dead weight. You know, so I think artificial satellites are perfectly possible. But I think a thing the size of the Hubble telescope was probably never possible. You've probably got people who've argued about that. If you look at the Hubble telescope pictures, they just look like watercolors to me. I think they're just anyway. That's
I don't doubt that either.
The rocket
and once something's in space, have you done the calculation that how can they steer it? Where do they get the power? How can they manipulate it once it's up there?
Well, you can do it in a small scale. I mean, I believe this is what they do with satellites, assuming they actually exist. You know, you don't need much fuel to kind of change the...
But where do they get the fuel? How do they refuel it?
Something. Well, they don't refuel it. They've got a finite life of a few years. Mm-hmm. And if they fall out of their orbit too much, presumably they're just unusable. So, I mean, I don't think it's...
Well, they have explanations for that, then. They're covered.
Well, I mean, I don't think it's like if you've got a rocket... which is they're not hugely expensive. I mean, it's just like a sort of giant car or something. You've got a rocket and you've got a satellite, which with modern technology, they can broadcast quite a lot of channels. I mean, I don't think there's a technical problem about that. The difficulty is probably just getting it into orbit because you've got to shoot it at the right angle. I don't have problems with that. I do have problems with big, heavy objects, though, because rockets just cannot... However, if you make them bigger... There's a scaling problem, you see. If you make rockets twice the height, you've got four times the area of stuff coming out, but it weighs eight times as much. There's a limit to what you can do with it. And so so big objects are a problem, but small objects are not a problem. That's the basic idea of it, I think.
Okay.
Anyway, sorry.
So you believe there's satellites are possible?
Yeah. I've got no problems really with satellites, but... you know, you get a bit sceptical, don't you? I mean, I suppose it's possible that there's some kind of fraud there. But the problem with that is that, you see, satellites for navigation were originally designed for shipping. You know, mm-hmm. I think one of the best sat-navs is supposed to be Navman, which was navigating things at sea, where, of course, it's more needed. I think when they'd sold as many as they could of those, they thought, well, we can add a few computer-generated maps, you know, and use these things on land as well. But the original ones were at sea, and I mean, I don't think you're not going to have lots of islands with broadcasting towers. So I'm happy about that. The other stuff on here is to do with a whole lot of different topics which are scientific, like small nuclear power plants in rockets, which is possible, a little tiny one, which would not last that long. And there's the connection with things like relativity. Mm-hmm. And there's also the difficulty of actually measuring radiation. See, when you're investigating science, the best trick, if you can do it, is to work out how it is that people know what they believe. I mean, for example, in cell biology, I've got a whole section here on cell biology in Big Lies. This was the work of Harold Hillman, who I knew personally.
Are you skipping off this topic here?
No, sorry. It's kind of related with things like electron microscopy in biology. There mm-hmm. are all kinds of mistakes. And if you don't understand that, you're going to go wrong ever subsequently. And I think the same thing is true with radiation. It's very difficult to measure.
Yes.
And, for example, some ridiculous example is that in Fukushima, they were producing maps of the supposed radiation. But these were computer-generated. They didn't measure it. They were just, it was a computer-generated thing. It's just incredible. Mm-hmm. Some of this stuff is really quite astonishing. And there's other stuff here which is related to nuclear weapons. For example, the speed of light and relativity. And I mean, we could go into that a bit, if you like. I've got a section on mistakes in modern physics, on Big Lies, but it's related to this as well. For example, the speed of light thing, you see, the way they got this limit of the speed of light was by using charged particles, you know, electrons, I should imagine, mm-hmm. in a magnetic field, right? And the more magnetism you put in, the faster they go. And you could measure, I don't know how they measured the speed of electrons, there's some inferential way of doing it, maybe going around a circle or something. And they found out that the more energy you put in, you know, the thing would not go faster in proportion. And so they mm-hmm. concluded that the speed of light was the limit. But that's an error there. There's a mistake there, because the generating power, the thing that was moving the electron, it does itself move at the speed of light, you see. So there's no way it would go faster than the speed of light. However much energy you put in, you're tugging the thing along at that mm-hmm. particular speed. And so that's a complete mistake to assume that the speed of light was a limit. I mean, it may be true, there may be some limits, but that evidence doesn't hold water. And what followed on from that was one of the things about relativity, this MC squared thing, which is actually based on Pythagoras. It's a very simple mistake, really. If you get C over V, that's the sort of velocity divided by the velocity of light, it's actually the reciprocal of 1 minus that squared, and you take the square root of that. If you expand that as a series, you end up with sort of MC squared, roughly speaking. And so that whole mistake comes from assuming that the speed of light was a limit and that Pythagoras applied. And there's a whole kind of pyramid of bullshit.
Do you think Einstein was just a fraud, was just a actor?
He was a plagiarist. He wasn't exactly an actor. There's another very good point that was raised by, I think it was Sorensen or one of these people.
Yes.
That he worked in a patent office, you see, and if you work, that sounds kind of a bit mundane, but if you think about it, you're getting access there to ideas from really cutting-edge people, you see. So I think it's entirely possible that he just picked up ideas from that, and he did, that formula was plagiarized, and I think the whole thing was just bullshit. It's a Jewish propaganda exercise, in my view.
Mm-hmm.
And when the Germans laughed at for saying that it was Jewish physics, I think they're probably completely right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, nobody ever quotes their documents, quotes what they're actually saying, but I think Einstein was a bullshitter. But in fact, he had nothing to do with nuclear bombs. as people point out, to people like C.P. Snow, etc., yeah. Einstein is a wonder. A lot of people thought Einstein was a very wise man. I mean, Russell did as well.
Although they thought he was a genius.
Well, there's a difference between they thought
his name is substituted for the term genius all the time. You're no Einstein. That's what people say.
Yep, it certainly is. There's two issues. There's the alleged genius in physics issue, which in my view is bullshit. There's also the alleged wise man stuff, which in my view is also bullshit, because he just adopted the standard Jewish line that if it's good for Jews, then that's good. I mean, he supported the USSR. He supported, in effect, he supported mass murder. I don't. So I've got no candle to hold for Einstein. But anyway, so I think relativity is bullshit. But the reason nobody criticizes it on a large scale is because
they don't understand it.
No, I think it's because it supports the nuclear myth. You know, it's like the Big Bang. It sounds consistent with nuclear weapons. The Big Bang idea.
I guess people don't realize that these are all theories. The Big Bang theory. They're not set in stone laws in any way. So a theory really is just a story that everyone believes in, and they get their club to back it, and they propagate it. But
yeah, that's true.
It never loses its descriptor as theory, because it.
That's right.
So I think you talk about this in a little way as well. It's almost like a cabal. The scientific community is designed to create myths and hold on to them and exclude anyone who questions them. So
yeah, they have that. That is one of their functions. There's no doubt.
It's like the medical system.
Yeah.
They create a money swindle of treatments, and any alternative treatments that may not generate the same revenue is excluded and marginalized.
Yeah, well, you have to be careful to try to isolate the science bit from the empirical and the repetitive bit. Some of it is not good enough just to reject all the stuff.
Yes.
And this is why I try to burrow down to the basis of it. That's my thing about Hillman is based on that. Poor old Hillman spent his whole life opposing the biology establishment with basically on methodological, technical grounds, the techniques they were using. You see, cells in bodies are much tinier than people imagine. I mean, much smaller than a grain of sand. Mm-hmm. Very difficult to examine them. And electron microscopy was one technique which looked good. But in fact, the preparation needed, you have to dehydrate the sample, for example, you know, that sort of thing. Dehydrate it and fix it in plastic. They have such a deforming effect that you can't assume that what you see actually existed originally. If you do, you go up blind alleys, and they've been doing that for 50 years, 60, 70 years now. So a lot of, and the same with, there's another technique called subcellular fractionation, where you get what's essentially a sort of magi mix, like a sort of kitchen mixer. You stick the cells in and chop them all up. Mm-hmm. And then you use a centrifuge, and they assume that the layers of the centrifuge correspond to the actual cell parts, which is just ridiculous. It's not thermodynamically possible. So again, you've got the very suspect technique. I think this is why virology is in such a mess. I mean, AIDS, for example, is a whole load of bullshit. Mm-hmm.
Let's get back to where we were here.
Yeah, okay. Well, there's a lot of other stuff about nukes, nuclear physics, uranium, 235, that kind of stuff.
Do you think uranium and the isotope is a real thing, or is that more?
I think it's a real thing. I think it's very rare. I think depleted uranium is probably a hoax, actually, because if we're right, they're not using this uranium for anything serious at all. Maybe for experimental stuff, or whatever. It's just uranium. They've mined the stuff. Instead, there's a link there with Belgium and the Belgian Congo.
Where's that?
Because Belgian Congo is, well, Central Africa.
No, where's the link?
Oh, I see. Okay. I know. Sorry.
I'm trying to follow the web. Your description of the website here.
The web of interconnected stuff. There was in. The Belgian Congo was famous at the end of the 19th century as one of the biggest atrocities possibly of all time. The Belgians forced the blacks there to grow rubber for them, and there was large-scale atrocities, deaths, and all that kind of stuff. It's supposed to be mm-hmm. the basis for a book by Joseph Conrad, Lord Jim. It's supposed to be the basis for Lord Jim. Anyway, Belgium had a connection with the Congo, and they there's a thing called the Atomium. I don't know if you know that in Brussels, a sort of atom thing. And they
never heard of it.
It's like a modernist sculpture, only in the 60s. Anyway, if you've got a mine of something and you can make money out of it, then you get excited. You know, I don't think uranium has any particular value, except that mm-hmm. it's very heavy. It's probably why they use it in weapons. So one of the never mind. Let me get on here.
Let's get back to where we were. Are we still under science, nuclear physics, astronomy, and space travel on the forum?
I guess so, yeah. There's a thing there about Einstein and E equals MC squared. Yes. It was written by Nuclides, plagiarist. There's an amusing thing about Parkinson, actually, of Parkinson's law. He was discussing, you know, the R-101 airship? It's crashed spectacularly and caught fire in 1930-something.
There's that magic number, 101 again.
Anyway, there's a description by Parkinson of how scientists are forced into inappropriate behavior just by administrators who don't know what they're doing. It's quite an interesting parallel with NASA and possibly with nuclear bombs, you know, because with the nuclear thing, they must have discovered at some point it wasn't going to work. And NASA must also at some point have discovered that they're not going to get to the moon. The R-101 was different. They did actually get it together, but it was dangerously inflammable, the surface coating of it. Anyway, okay, let's go on to the next one after that.
Okay, that's the thread. I don't know anything about that.
I hope
that.
You're following me here. I'm jumping around rather, aren't I?
No, I'm following. I'm trying. I don't know anything about the C and Parkinson. That's all completely new to me. I don't even know about the R-101 airship either.
Have you not heard of Parkinson's law? Work expands to fill the time available.
No, that's a good one though. That's interesting.
Anyway, the next one.
You're teaching me a lot. I'm glad you're going through the forum because now I'm going to have to go back later and read all this stuff.
Well, I try to encourage people to do things for themselves, although it's a bit of a thankless task because you know. He who's convinced against his will is of the same opinion still. I quote Alexander Pope. If you find stuff for yourself, that's quite a powerful thing. In fact, I did that with NASA. I had an old copy of the National Geographic from 1969, which I hoarded for some reason. And I found on that one of the little pictures of a bloke supposedly hammering a flag or something into the moon.
Yes.
There's exactly the same picture on the NASA website, but they'd moved the little crosshair thing so that it didn't show up. You know this crosshair business where it goes behind something where it shouldn't do, something like mm-hmm. that. They'd actually moved it. So if you find evidence for yourself, it reinforces your faith in the thing being possibly wrong.
Yes.
The reason I'm saying that is because this check media yourself for fakes and lies, nuclear movers and stills, that's an account of stuff that we went through, including me. You can download some of this stuff. There's a site called archive.org that has some of these now declassified sites. Films, which of course have been put into DVD form. Very interesting. I mean, it's terrifying really to see what crap people have been fed. And there's one interesting thing on that site, Lookout Mountain. There's a studio in Los Angeles where they faked all these nuclear films. Their output was bigger than Hollywood, actually.
Yeah, you're talking about, is this the Laurel Canyon thing?
Laurel Canyon, yeah, that's next to it. That's quite interesting.
Oh, yes, Lookout Mountain. I think I've heard about that. That was the NASA fakery studio, right?
Yep, that's right. It went up on sale recently, believe it or not. If you've got a few million dollars, you could buy it yourself and start your own museum. Museum of Fakery. Look at the Laurel Canyon. There's an LP, as it used to be called, a long player by Joni Mitchell called Ladies of the Canyon, and that's she lived there. She lived at Laurel Canyon. A whole lot of these pop stars, largely the manufactured ones, the ones you haven't really heard of, were related to all this fakery. They're the sons and daughters of military or film people. In fact, I'd be very interested to know whether how much the military participate in this and how much they actually know. Because if you've got something like nuclear weapons, suppose you're a general or something, you know, I suppose they have a sort of menu of things to choose from, you know, that you can blow people up with this or that, or burn them alive or whatever. And one of the things must be the, you know, the ABC X nuke bomb. And you don't actually have to know if it works, do you? You just kind of, like, you order 100 of them, get somebody to sign the check, and you know, maybe you never even see them. So
people have to be on most of these hoaxes. It's definitely on a need-to-know basis, and most people don't need to know. So, I'm right on board with that. Very few people have to know the ins and outs and the mechanics of anything that they're doing.
In fact, yeah, we got a
most people don't know how their car engine works, so why is this any different?
True enough.
Most people couldn't even find the simplest components of their car. They're not trained in it, and I would venture to say many people couldn't even pop their own hood.
You may well be right there. We call it a bonnet in Britain.
A bonnet, yeah. Well, maybe 30 years ago when they were instructed every time they went into a gas station or filling station, as you call it, they would have to know how to pop their own bonnet because those are the days when they actually inspected fluid levels on a daily basis, which is probably a good thing. But, people don't have any idea about the mechanics of almost everything that they touch. So I don't think anyone in the military necessarily would be any different. So I've often postulated, somebody asked me, do you think the leaders of countries, of nuclear countries, well, not necessarily nuclear weapon holding countries, but countries that have nuclear power, do you think they are in on the secret? Or would they not need, they would not need to know really, would they?
It's a good question. I probably not. I mean, there are lots of things that, it's impossible to be certain, isn't it?
No, you can't be certain, but the people that signed the checks to authorize this massive tax swindle, if that's what we believe, they wouldn't know either.
I think that's right, yeah. I think that's right. We did get a comment to one of the YouTubes from a policeman, an ex-cop, whose job, this is what he claimed, it looked as though it was true, I don't know, that, you know, every month or something, some pimply-faced youth, he called him, would come around, who just got out of college, to maintain the H-bombs, you know, like, sort of tighten something up or whatever. And he didn't believe it. He thought that these are the most dangerous weapons sort of on Earth. You'd need more than that to maintain. So he was on board with the idea that they were fakes.
You would hope a team of white coat lab... of white lab coat wearing people would come in and in some secret specially undercover vehicle to propagate this myth. But anyway, let's get back to the forum. Are we still on science, nuclear physics, astronomy, and space travel on Nuclize? Yeah.
I think so.
Or do you want to move on to the next topic?
I was looking at the movies, Stills, Soundtracks one. That's the Lookout Mountain one.
Mm-hmm. Where is that? I don't see that.
You don't. It's the next. It's the next one.
Oh, we've moved down. Okay, hold on. Nuclear movies, Stills, Soundtracks. Check the media yourself for fake.
Yeah. Well, there's the one. Okay. There's the thing about Lookout Mountain at the top there.
I've got that.
And there's the one underneath the information block underneath, which. It's my advice, telling them, you know, have a look, buy these things if you want to, or download them and just check. Because you see, with modern video editing things, you can look at one frame at a time, and if there's one inverted, which is what Jess Waugh found, to make the thing look as though there's a sudden brightness, they'd insert one dark frame, you know, a negative, and then put a bright one. And I mean, that's not something that's going to happen spontaneously in nature, is it? So it's obviously faked. Actually, there's another similar fake. Perhaps I can just mention this, which is with H-bombs. They're supposed to be a double mechanism. You get an atom bomb that goes off, and it's surrounded by something like, lithium hydrogen, some hydrogen thing called deuterium, containing compound, mm-hmm. or tritium, whatever. And then you get a great big, you know, much bigger blast after that. But if you think about it, there's a small problem. And you see these films, they've got the double flash. You get one bright frame, then it goes dark, and there's another mm-hmm. bright one. And you can see that by looking at the single frame. And that's simply, it's just not credible. Because first of all, the first flash will be a lot dimmer than the second one. And in any case, if it's designed properly, the first flash should not be visible because it's surrounded by all this stuff which itself has to blow up. So there should just be, you should just see one big flash. And even if you could see both flashes, they wouldn't be separated by the timing between film frames, you know. If you're seeing a film, typically you've got, say, 30 frames a second. So mm-hmm. to get a light one, dark one, light one, you've got a 15th of a second between the two, which is just not credible. It's supposed to be much faster than that. So that's something to watch for on these films. But there are plenty of other anomalous kind of absurdities.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that's to encourage people to look at images. We've got another section here, rogues and dupes. That's basically propagandists, liars. So you get propagandists, people who know what they're doing, but you also get publicists, people who are told what to say. Mm-hmm. You know? And you also get dupes. I mean, in my view, George Orwell, for example, in my view, is a dupe. He wrote a short piece on nuclear weapons, comparing. Oh, really? He said if they were as cheap as alarm clocks, the world would be a different place. I don't think he really quite grasped what he was dealing with, or supposedly dealing with. But I think Orwell was a fellow traveller. I mean, all his books were Jewish published. I think he's very much overrated because of that. I don't think his material is really particularly sound. And Bertrand Russell is another example. Russell, all his life, avoided this Jewish issue. He was in, he was actually in the Soviet Union when it was established, and he could see all these people being shot and everything. And in fact, he knew they were Jews. He mentioned it in a letter home. But he completely phased it out. It's part of the Anglo-Jewish thing. You just don't talk about these things. Mm-hmm. I think. Anyway, towards the end of his life, he was a nuclear protester, you see. I think he was... Of course, he believed they existed. And he spent a lot of time organizing marches. In fact, I went to one of their marches. They had marches to Aldermaston. And I think in retrospect, he was just controlled opposition, you know.
Yes.
To make it look as though people were concerned about it. And then the Cuba crisis, he acted on that. He wrote telegrams to Kennedy in 1962. And I think, you see, looking back, again, that's the Cuba crisis. Castro, I'm fairly sure, was another one of these Jews. He was a Sephardic, I think they call him the Sephardic, Spanish Jew, and the whole idea. I mean, you know, they were bombing Vietnam for 20 years or something, and that was miles further away than Cuba. I mean, you can't seriously tell me if they hadn't wanted to bomb Cuba, they could have done it. Of course, they could.
I think George Orwell was part of the system as well, and he was no more warning about the future as he was writing about what those that are in power wanted to become the future. So
I think it's all Cold War.
Yeah, I think it's pre-predictive programming. It's preconditioning. This is what they envision. This is what they want. So
they create these. Cuba.
Yeah. Well, I'm just talking about George Orwell and how he was no great author in the sense that even his name, I think, is psychologically constructed. Orson Welles, H.G. Wells. I really think that there's thought put into the creation of his name. He didn't just pick his pen name. So
can I just ask if you've got a view on Cuba? Maybe you've forgotten about it. 1962, well, you know, there's supposed to have been a big standoff with.
No, I think all these conflicts are manufactured. They're all in the same team. I know you're big on the Jewish angle, which we've had debates, as I'll remind people, between the Jews and the Jesuits, and someone I respect a lot that's in this fakery game has pointed out that it doesn't really matter necessarily. Well, it does matter when they're trying to figure out who is doing what, but I'm pretty sure those that are in power, those that have the money, whether they be Jews, whether they be Jesuits, whether they're all part of the same club, the elites, those that control the money. So it's, I know you're big again on the whole Jewish angle, but I've had a couple debates about a lot of the history of manipulation of people through religion. So I'm not, but I am pretty convinced in many ways that a lot of these conflicts are simply orchestrated, and the whole Cuba Missile Crisis probably wasn't a real crisis because we're not really at war with Russia at all. They're all staged events. So, and I would have never thought about this unless, again, 9/11 was the ultimate in staged events. So there's no reason, if you look at 9/11, the template used for 9/11, including the event, the fakery, the investigative commission that came after it, it was all identical to the whole Kennedy assassination. So just taking the logic that you think that 9/11 was a fake event, like I do, then it's easy to apply it to the whole Kennedy situation, where he probably wasn't even killed, but the whole thing was scripted.
Well, okay, there's a Jewish connection with Kennedy as well. In fact, one of the... Okay, are you happy to go on for longer?
Sure. The format of the show is very very freestyle, and usually I budget 3 hours. Because all kinds of different topics come up, so there's no we're under no constraints, Ray.
Right, good. Thank you, Ab. The enraged. I looked you up actually. The enraged man. That's a legal expression, isn't it?
Yes.
To do with defendants or something who get fed up with being pissed around by the lawyers. I think it's probably the interpretation.
Well, I looked up and it has a lot to do with. If you suspect that somebody drew up a will in rage or in vengeance, then you can dispute the will.
That sounds right, too.
As an aberrato, saying that this person wasn't in his right mind and these weren't his intentions. There's all kinds of excuses to get lawyers involved to undo contracts.
Okay, the rogues and dupes thing has a lot of material. Can I just go into this business about paper money. I know it's
sure.
This is maybe not your favorite subject. You know, 1913 was the Fed, and it gave Jews or that collection of Jews the legal rights to print paper money. And I think I'm right saying that they got interest on it. You know, they lend it to the government. I mean, so if the government would come along and say, right, we need $100 billion or less in those days. They would lend it to them at a percentage, you know, which sounds very reasonable if it's genuinely valuable. But if the stuff doesn't cost you much to print, then you're getting a huge return on it. You know, if a $10 bill costs you 10 cents and you get 3% on it, then in effect you get 300%, if you see what I mean. So they're sitting there with this money growing. And they can also direct it, because of their tribal loyalty, to other Jews. And there's a whole networks of organizations which just spend Jewish money, and there's nobody can compete with it. That's the point. Somebody comes up with a good idea, they can just be bought out at some stage, and it's just impossible to act against it. I think this is the main thing about Jews. You see, they didn't have to do that. If they'd had any sense, they could have thought, oh, well, you know, suppose you were offered a guaranteed, you know, £1 billion a year in exchange for a bit of light work, pretending to arrange printing of money, your first thought, I imagine, if you're anything like me, you'd think, well, you know, I can have some nice houses or something. You don't think, oh, well, I can use that to subvert the country, cause loads of immigration, start wars, and ridicule Christianity. It's not part of your mental makeup.
Right. You're saying it's just a tool. It's just an invisible tool to control people. If you control the money, you control the country. I understand.
It is invisible, yeah, in a very precise sense.
It's like nuclear power. Nuclear is invisible. You can't touch, feel, or taste it. You are only going by what you're told.
Yeah. Well,
do you even believe that Madame Curie and all that was real, or was that more propaganda of a story?
I'm quite happy that there are isotopes of elements. I mean, I think that's very well established, and some of them are unstable. Mm-hmm. And that rearranging a nucleus would give off a lot of energy. The question is whether it actually happens. In fact, there's another good piece of work by first-class skeptic was to look into this supposed paper in the 30s, which said that uranium split into things like barium. If you look at the evidence, I mean, it's a ridiculous. In effect, they got a sort of jam jar of stuff of a salt of uranium, you know, like uranium carbonate or something, some soluble uranium thing, and put it next to a source of radiation for about 3 or 4 weeks. Then they claimed that there was barium in it, but their detection method actually involved adding barium. And so the whole thing just sounds a complete tissue of crap to me.
Ludicrous. So, yeah. Well, of course there's barium in it because you just put it in.
There is that suspicion, yeah. I don't think anybody ever duplicated the experiments. That's another key sign, actually, is if nobody does it themselves, if nobody ever tries it again. You see, if it comes under suspicion, people will try and duplicate it. Like with cold fusion, there are loads of people trying it. But with nukes, it hasn't happened. Incidentally, I think some of these nuclear things are fakes. After World War II, there were a whole lot of elements like americium and californium. And I wouldn't be surprised if some of them are highly suspect, because they're only supposed to exist for a tiny fraction of a second. And, you know, they might infer they're there just because there was some radiation supposedly given off. So it is possible that these things, which have only ever existed in little micro amounts, were, you know, faked or just assumed to be there, or, you know, because it looked good, because their lab got some credit for it, that sort of thing.
Yeah, it's certainly something that almost nobody on Earth can argue about. There are very few people qualified or predisposition to question it. So all of us just have to sit back in wonderment and just consider it a magic show, as far as I'm concerned.
Okay. Just to get back to the Fed, in 1913, I think Baruch was the leader of it. And of course, they got the U.S. into World War One. In about 1916, partly because of the pretext of the Balfour Declaration about a homeland for the Jews, because Britain and Germany were stalemated; they were stuck in the trenches, and the Germans made quite a generous. They said they'd go back. They said, "Right, we've made a mistake. We'll go back to the previous borders and sort of forget it all." But the British, being rather stupid or something, all the bosses, they wanted to crush Germany. They wanted to keep on. Partly, maybe it's a career thing. I mean, if you're a general and you're running a war, it's presumably it's more fun for you than sort of sitting around not running a war. Anyway, Baruch in 1916 was more or less the dictator of America. The whole American economy was in his hands. It's incredible. I mean, I think he handled it discreetly. There was no very obvious connection, although people like Henry Ford noticed it. But I mean, the point is, by the time of Manhattan, he was still there. And in fact, it continues. If you look in books on South Africa and atomic programs and so on, they're all funded by merchant banks. There's no who presumably have no knowledge of nuclear stuff. And so Baruch funded the Manhattan thing, funded Oppenheimer. And there were various people. In fact, it's quite interesting that quite a lot of them are Hungarian Jews, specifically. I think Leo Szilard, that's Szilard, was a Hungarian Jew. I think Edward Teller was as well, and there's several more of them. I think one of the reasons is, for some reason, Hungary had chemical engineering plants, and the Manhattan Project was essentially a great big chemical engineering thing, centrifuge. So that was there was some money in that, I presume, for these people. Anyway, the Jewish connection is unquestionably vitally important in investigating all this stuff. So I make no apology for bringing that up. So that's the Manhattan Project, Oppenheimer, the USSR being a Jewish thing, including mass murder on a huge scale. All the atom spies were Jews. And now, whether Stalin... I still don't know whether Stalin was, in fact, a figurehead to pretend that the USSR wasn't Jewish, or if he actually had any real power. It's just impossible to say. But I don't know whether he knew about nukes. He might, you see, The H-bomb, the Russian alleged H-bomb was 1950. I think it was the same year that Stalin died. It's possible there was something funny happened there. Possibly he became aware that it was a fake or something. One just doesn't know. There's something similar with China, actually. We discussed at some point, Mao know about this kind of stuff? Because if you look at the Chinese videos on YouTube of their tests, I mean, they're even worse than the American ones. There's some ridiculous ones with like a sort of black firework going off. Very, very amateurish.
Do you have any links to those?
I don't offhand. It'll be in the website somewhere. Probably in the video, probably near the beginning, because we've got a whole section on YouTubes and videos.
So we're still under rogues and dupes right now.
I think so. Let's have a look. Here we are. Guide your tour. Yeah, I've got a guide tour. I recommend that. There's a set of links. I've got here Chomsky. Yeah, on nukes. I'm afraid I'd concluded that Chomsky is phony as well, although I had quite a high opinion of earlier on. But I think he's controlled opposition. You know, he was part of the Russell Vietnam war crimes thing. And if you look at what he actually wrote, he never really sticks to the subject. He goes off onto, you know, what a hard time Jews supposedly had. So I think Chomsky was a phony. I think his linguistics work is phony too, actually, to be honest. If you have a look at it, I heard him lecture once. I taped him, in fact. And I just don't think it's sound stuff. I think he's just a money-making thing. There's other stuff here. What do U.S. veterans think of nukes? That would be quite an interesting one. Nobody answered, though. There's some of my reviews which Amazon censored. Mary Calder. Oh, here's a thing about Catholicism. We did have a thing about Zogs and Catholics. I think our decision was that Catholics just aren't that influential.
You know, I'm just looking at the website here. I'm under the guided tour. We're out of that, though. So we're still on rogues and dupes, right?
Okay, can you see Noam Chomsky on nukes?
Yes, that's the first topics. One.
Okay, I was just sort of scanning down there. There's five or six of them down. There's do Catholic conspirators rule the world?
Right, okay, I see that.
That was our look at that. Our conclusion was, I was surprised, incidentally, how uniform the views were. I do really think because of internet, there's a kind of convergence of opinions.
You know? Yes. Well, it's a collating experience.
That's absolutely right.
It's easier to collate views and assemble them.
And, of course, it's faster than it's ever been. It's really quite astonishing. I mean, in the last 10 years, they've been really quite incredible. I mean, just things like flat screens. I mean, when you look at these sort of huge boxes people used to have to use as screens.
Well, technology is amazing, and it should move faster because you're getting more coordination of work. And so presumably people aren't duplicating what they're doing.
Well, yeah, maybe. There's other stuff here, BBC. See, a lot of this stuff is a bit off topic, but it's kind of remotely connected. There are groups in Britain that... They keep this idea of nukes going. They say, you know, that America used mini nukes in the Middle East or something. I mean, the whole idea of a mini nuke, incidentally, is a load of. I mean, it's just inconsistent with the idea that you need a critical mass.
By the way, I'm emailing First Class Skeptic here as we're talking, and he is. I'm trying to tell him to call in and discuss some of this with you, but
okay. He might not have. He might be on Skype. Tell him that.
No, he says he can't get Skype going. So I said, just call our phone number, which I'll just rebroadcast right now.
You're listening to Wake Up with Ab. On this show, we talk about the biggest media hoax of our time, 9/11, and all the children she spawned since then. You can call us at 518-907-4904 or at Skype contact ab.arato99. We're streaming 24 hours a day from radio.aberrato.info, the same place you can find all of our archives. The show is usually live Saturdays at 8 p.m., but we may live broadcast any evening time as guests become available. Don't miss these shows by signing up at radio.aberrato.info to be notified by email. Now, on with the show.
Yeah, we're getting into hour three of episode 35 with Ray, revisionist of big-lies.org. And also he froze the forum, Jesse Waugh's forum, nukelies.org. We're just talking about the whole nuclear hoax, nuclear power, and his forum, which is very in-depth, very fascinating. It's going to take quite some time to go through it all.
Yeah, it's a whole years of work on it, basically, and it's frozen so that people can, there'll be no doubt about what was there. It's not going to change. Let me just interject here. Let me just talk about some of the commentators in sort of order of the number of posts. And Nuke Lies was a chap who started it, Jess, but he's more interested in esoteric travel and aesthetic stuff. He kind of dropped out, really, or left in a huff, I'm not sure, which is a pity. But anyway, that's his stuff is a bit it's not a bit marginal to the main nuclear issues. A first class skeptic is a very, very good contributor, as you can see if you read it. Very good researcher and stuff. There's me, and I like to think I'm very good as well. I think me and first class between us were probably
the main whole site.
Yeah. Then there was a chap called Verioc, V-O-E-R-I-O-C, who's French, and he's very good. He's very good. He's Jew aware. He's got his JADAR switched on. He's also got an interesting sideline in health and contagion. He doesn't believe in some theories of disease. In fact, he did start a site. I don't know if it's still in existence, though, on that subject. Now, there's a chap called Sorensen, 731. He's Spanish. He's very good as well. He's got a very nice little avatar, which is a sort of dollar bill or a note with a picture of Lenin in the middle. It's quite a nice avatar. He's interested in psychology and history, including very severe alternative history, the Anatoly Fomenko school, which some of people out there will recognize. I hadn't heard of him at the time, Fomenko.
Never heard of it.
You haven't? Well, he's another interesting thing. He thinks that... You won't believe this, really, but he thinks that a lot of history is kind of faked. A lot of the stories of rulers in all kinds of different countries that were actually copied from the same source, and he bases that on a statistical analysis of the reigns and the times between reigns.
And I wouldn't have any problem believing that. You say I wouldn't believe it. I don't have any problem believing just about anything now.
Anyway. Anyway, he introduced me to Fomenko. There's a chap called Exorcist who's British, who's a sort of late arrival, and he's promising, although I don't think he's actually achieved much. He was one of the ones who came from lunar skepticism. There were several of them like that. They did stuff on NASA, and then they found this nuke stuff, which, of course, is more important, really. And Exorcist was quite good on imagery, quite good on analysing pictorial stuff. And then there's somebody called Moon Inquirer, who fell out with the site. I think it was because I edited one of his pieces had two separate bits, and I moved the two halves differently, and he got pissed off with me. But it's a rather shame. But he's good. He's particularly good on LBJ, Kennedy, the Jim Crow laws, that kind of thing. He's good on the 1960s in America, which, from his point of view, and I think rightly, was a kind of Jewish takeover. Because the Kennedy murder to get Johnson in, and all the race, the immigration acts at the time, there was essentially a Jewish takeover of the U.S. in the 60s, more than as basically funded by the paper money thing. Anyway, then there's Ewing 2001. He's called Nico Haupt. He goes for these very strange connections, like, for example, the way research continued.
Hold on, Ray, we got a call coming in. Good morning, caller.
Hello. This is First Class Skeptic. Good morning.
Oh, good morning, sir. Good. We finally connected. Very good. Welcome. You're talking to Ray. The re-revisionist is on the line at the same time.
Oh, good.
Sorry, who are you?
This is Daniel.
Oh, you're fantastic. Fantastic! I'm really pleased.
I've created a reunion of the First Class Skeptic and Re-Revisionist of the Nuke Lies forums.
It's not a reunion; it's a union.
Okay.
Okay. What are we talking about?
Have you listened to any of the stuff? Basically, I've been going through the Nuclize website, sort of starting at the beginning, and we're about sort of three quarters of the way through it. And your name has been mentioned many times, not surprisingly. But I do have my Big Lies site, which has other stuff on things like AIDS and, you know, Jews and Harold Hillman. Do you want to make a comment? Do you want to give a sort of statement?
Well, in the last day or two, I found another photo of Little Boy. It's on a website. I think it's called Alternate Wars. I can't give you a link over the phone, but he shows a picture of a bomb from the backside. You know, there's a famous picture of the two men standing there, and they're grinning, and the one guy's painting L11 on the side of the bomb. And the door and the sides are taken off the bomb, and you can see the internal electronics.
Yeah.
It's on Wikipedia. You can find a huge, big file on Wikipedia, about a 3-meg file, and you can see all the stuff that's inside that bomb. And they say this is the only picture of it with the cover off. But there's a guy that has a website. I think it's called Alternate Wars, and he shows a picture from the other side that I've never seen before, and it's the only place I can find it. And it shows two more of the APS-13 units from the backside. And you can tell it's the same bomb, it's the same picture, it's the same chain hoist, it's the same pallet that it's sitting on, it's the same paint on the walls. And it's got to be the same bomb at the same place. And so there's like, you can see two APS-13 units from one side. And you go on the other picture, and you can see two APS units, and they're both facing frontwards on both sides. You see the front on the back side and the front, so it looks like four of them.
Yeah.
And I called the Devonshire Museum in England someplace that has an APS-13 unit. I said, measure that for me, if you would, please. And he measured the dimensions. And I cut out a circle of cardboard, 25 inches diameter, and laid it down and cut out four pieces, four rectangles of the size of those APS-13 units, and tried to lay them on that cardboard like they are in that picture. And what comes out is they don't fit. You'd have to cut the backs off of them. You'd have to, two of them, you'd have to cut them in half almost to get them to fit in there. And where they say in the center of this little boy, there was a gun barrel.
Yeah.
Right? And the uranium shot down that gun barrel. Well, I mean to tell you, if you put them APS-13 units in there the way they show it on that 25-inch circle, you're not going to get that gun barrel down the center.
That sounds terrific. Hey, several things. I'm really pleased to hear you, actually.
Did I talk too long?
No,
you're doing just fine, first class, or Daniel. We'll call you Daniel. No, we really wanted to get both of you on the line because both of you have done such a great job on Nuke Lies, and Re-Revisionist is just going through the forum, actually, and your name comes up all the time as a great contributor. So really, we want to go through the forum and get your comments as we're going through it.
Okay.
Daniel, my man, can you do me a favor? If you've got more stuff to contribute, such as that, can you email it to me at... If you look at Big Lies, there's an email address, and I'll insert it. You know, I'll add it in with the
Big Lies email address.
Big-Lies, yeah. Well, the email address is anything will do. Daniel at
big-lies.org. Daniel, let me just reiterate, you're listening to the radio.abarato.info radio show, Radio Ab. And if you go to radio.abarato.info on your computer, you'll see episode 35 and click on that, where we have links to the websites and we have a comment section where you can leave comments. So we're all organized. Pardon me?
It's on YouTube?
No, it's a separate site. No, it's a separate website. If you just type into any web browser, radio.abarato.info, you will come to the website. It's separate from YouTube. Now, there is a radio ab on YouTube. You can go there as well and leave comments. And I do post a show on YouTube or a portion of it. So you can go there as well. So.
Oh, I just wanted to say one more thing about what I was talking about.
Sure.
Let's say just every drawing you look at, like on Wikipedia, they'll say this is a drawing of a little boy inside. And if you look on Wikipedia, it says the APS-13 units are not included. And I think it won't fit. They won't fit right in there. That's why they're not included in the drawings. And that's what I want to say. I'll try to draw all that up and take pictures of it and send it to someplace.
Okay. If you like, I'd be quite happy to add it into the nuclearized site as it is. I don't know if you'll. By the way, are you happy with the nuclearized site? I mean, did I annoy anybody? You haven't seen that?
I haven't looked at it much.
Okay, well, it's a frozen version. It's just as it was when it was closed down. Because Jess Waugh he suddenly took it down for reasons which I still don't know. But, I mean, I can add in things. I can sort of shoehorn them in. I just want to say I'm really pleased to hear from you because you've done a really significant job.
Well, thanks.
Don't thank me. That's the truth. It's
Daniel, so what is your whole overall perspective of the nuclear bomb and nuclear power? Can you just give us a brief outline of what you think of the whole thing?
Are you asking me?
Yes, Daniel, go ahead.
Okay. Well, I think it all was developed to put people worldwide into a state of scared, of panic, of being scared all the time, so that you would be obedient to your government. And you would pay your taxes and you wouldn't complain because, you know, the people in the United States of America was being told all the time, oh, them Russians, they could bomb us any night. They could bomb us anytime. We could wake up in the morning and all the cities would just be obliterated. And you got the preachers doing it too. Like I told Ray West, the preachers coming, oh, I had this vision and I saw the heavens, planes drop open up and the bombs dropped and there was mushroom. And they had everybody scared. Everybody's so scared, and they're, you know. But what I discovered is, they're not only doing it to people in the United States. Over in Russia, they were telling them that the United States was going to bomb them. So it's like a worldwide thing, and it connects. It's kind of proof that all these governments of the world are all kind of just run by the same people. There was no Cold War.
Right.
The people on top that's in charge. They knew that there was never going to be any kind of a nuclear exchange.
Yes, I agree.
Now, about the nuclear power plants, they might be making some power, but I don't think they're making enough to even pay back all the diesel fuel that they use to dig up the stuff. But it is interesting that there is no place on Earth that's powered exclusively by nuclear power.
Yes.
Which is something, you know, like Hawaii. Why doesn't Hawaii have a nuclear power plant?
That's right.
They got a state law against it. Why? It would be just right for them. Why do they have to haul coal and oil all the way to Hawaii when they could have a nuclear plant there? So that kind of makes me think it don't work.
Daniel, when did you become skeptical, and how did you become a skeptic, and how did you get involved in this? When did you start thinking that there could be a problem with the story?
Well, it was 2008, toward the end. It was almost New Year's, and I think I had a dream, and they said in the dream I was looking at the internet at. There's no such thing as an atomic bomb. And I'm walking along the road and with the dogs, and I got to thinking about this, and I thought, if you got a nuclear fission material and it starts a chain reaction, it's going to blow itself apart, and the chain reaction instantly stops. So you could only get a few little atoms or thousand to react, and once that reacted, it would just blow itself apart and would quit. And I thought, hey, it won't work. And I said, I'll have to go check the internet. And then I realized at the time my internet wasn't connected, and I thought, well, I must have dreamt it. it must have been a subconscious thing to come out in my dream somehow, that I realized that technically it will not work. And that's where I started. That was 2008, and I got on the internet later and found out there was a few other people, but not very many, that had also doubted that it existed. Mm-hmm. And that's how I got started. At first, I wondered if maybe I was the only one that thought it, but I found out there was a few other people that had thought about it.
Hey, go ahead, Ray. You want to ask him a question? Ray wants to ask you something.
Yeah, do you remember if that was before November 2008? Because that was when Jess Wall's Nuclize video went up on YouTube.
No, it was after November 2008.
Oh, okay.
But I didn't have an internet in November. So I don't know. I can't for certain say if I, glimpsed it on the internet someplace or not. I don't think I did. I think it came to me in a dream. It just came to me in a dream that I dreamt I was on the internet because I didn't have an internet then. Mm-hmm. And there was a full period of time I didn't have one. It was it shut off about second day of November, I think, that year.
So have you always been a skeptic of those that rule over us? Daniel, for instance, 9/11, how did you perceive that?
Well, when 9/11 happened, when I first saw the news and they said that the terrorists had attacked, I thought, well, if a terrorist is attacking the United States, they're going to start knocking everything out, electricity, telephone. But I'm watching television, and I thought, if the terrorists are knocking things out, how come I'm able to watch this on television? How come the electric's still on? How come the telephone's still working? Why aren't they attacking everything in the United States of America simultaneously? Just blow up two buildings. I thought, well, that doesn't hurt me. And it took me about 3 days, and I thought, I think this is a Mossad operation. Because the first thing they wanted to do was go attack Arab nations around Israel. And that's how I viewed it.
Can I ask you what your view is on the Jewish issue?
My views on the Jewish issue, Jews are kind of parasitical people that never seem to have much of occupations like an auto mechanic or a carpenter, although I did know a Jewish woman once that worked in electronics and soldered things, but most Jews are into businesses or clerical things, like Einstein was a cleric in a patent office, and bankers and lawyers and doctors. They don't really produce anything. They just sort of, they have to go someplace where there's other people that's producing and just kind of feed off of them.
Do you think the nuclear hoaxes, assuming they are hoaxes, were Jewish operations? Because, quite happy that they were.
Well, definitely. Most of the people working on the Manhattan Project were Jewish.
Okay.
Oppenheimer was Jewish. Einstein and the guy whose name I can never say right, Slizzard.
Oh, Szilard, yeah. Well, so were Churchill's advisors, weren't they? Lindemann was renamed Lord Cherwell. A lot of Churchill's advisors were Jews as well.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I don't want to go too down that angle. I know you think it's important, but I really want to focus on just the nuclear research and all your posts, if you don't mind.
Can I just finish off what I was doing before?
Well, yeah, of
I was
course.
Just listening. I was listing the names of people who'd contributed to Nuclize, and we got as far as Ewing in 2001. Mm-hmm. There's another one called Hiwa. I think you've spoken to him. He's general purpose one. He's quite good. There's Martin L., who I don't know much about. There's Eyes Wide Open, who was quite good. There's a chap called Cowan Bellarmino, who I think had a sort of Catholic attitude, judging by his name. And I spoke to him on Amazon as well. And Bamzam, B-A-M-Z-M, he was quite good as well. And Engineer was quite good. And so was Rodan. And there was also a chap called Dinosaur Denier, who's Russian, who was our Russian contributor. Mm-hmm. And there is a school of thought that dinosaurs are a fake, which you probably know about. And there's lies, all lies. He was quite good as well. Sorry, I just wanted to finish that off because we were That was when Dan came in.
Yes. Okay. So let's keep talking, and Dan, you can join in at any time and make comments since you were on most of the forum posts as well.
Do you want to go into the final topic after Rogues and Dupes was hyper-revisionism and other revisionisms?
Okay.
And that includes Anatoly Fomenko and Holocaust revisionism and 9/11. It also includes, Hollywood as a sort of fake factory. And there's also stuff on the Flat Earth Society, which actually is quite good. I knew the chap who was president of it, actually. He was a geologist, and he joined it because he liked being alternative, really. He didn't believe it. And there's stuff on the City of London. There's some interesting psychology stuff, actually, on whether hypnosis is genuine.
Yes.
And brainwashing, which, in my view, was a Korean War thing to prevent American servicemen from talking about atrocities. They were said to have been brainwashed to kind of avoid the issue. That was the 1950s. There's also stuff like Milgram and Zimbardo, and there's some interesting comments that these experiments were faked, that basically they were anti-white things to show that, horrid white men would electrocute other people if they were told to. Whether that's true or not, I'm not sure, but it's credible that people like Milgram made up this stuff. And we have stuff on fundamentalism. We have stuff on Thatcherism. Now, one of the very good points made by by Exorcist was that Thatcher's role was to get British assets into Jewish hands. They had a lot of paper money, and they wanted to control British assets. So under the disguise of privatization, basically, all these assets were sold to Jews, the utilities, that kind of stuff,
Mm-hmm.
And we've got some interesting stuff, Freedom Tower. There's a thing about look and say teaching that happened in the US as well after 1945. I think that was a deliberate plan to dumb down kids, because you can't learn words. Say there are thousands of words, and trying to learn them by the sort of shape of the word is ridiculous. It's quite apart from different typefaces. I think look and say was a deliberate dumbing down decision, which is why a lot of people can't read. And there was a first-class skeptic there, Daniel, there, was commenting on world population numbers. I wonder if he'd like to comment on that. He's skeptical about population numbers. I know this is a bit marginal, but are you there?
Yeah.
Do you want to comment?
I really wonder if there's really 7 billion people in the world, or if that's not exaggerated a mite. I really wonder if there's really 1.3 billion people in China. And I think there might be, Chinese government is socialistic, and it might be that the local governments can get more money if they say they got more people. And so maybe they exaggerate. I don't believe any other statistic that comes out of China, so I don't know why I should believe that.
Do you want to comment on other things? How about James Randi? We've got a thing about him. Because they're pseudo-skeptics, aren't they? I mean, they pretend to be skeptical, and they are skeptical of some important issues, but not about anything important, in my view, anyway.
Well, there was the one guy that came on Nuke Lies, and he said he doubted about nuclear submarines, and he was working on the nuclear submarine. But then, toward the end, he said, well, now I'm convinced they are running on atomic power. And I kind of thought that he might have just been somebody from the Pentagon trying to...
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. Have you got any more comments? There's a whole load. Have you got an internet with you now?
Yeah, I've got it turned on.
Are you looking at Nuke Lies? I mean, you can comment on anything. Look at I've got a thing here, AJP Taylor, who was a British historian. I think he was a phony. I've got a book review of GCHQ, it's British Intelligence, which slammed. It was an absolutely crap book. I really laid into it. It's President Carter and submarine, losing his codes. I'm just trying to remind you of things here. Oppenheimer on TV.
Anything you want to talk about,
Have you talked about the Lookout Mountain studio?
Yeah, we did.
A little bit.
Mentioned that, yeah. You discovered that, didn't you? It was on sale. You found the Los Angeles Real Estate Company or something like that.
Yeah, okay, I got nuclear eyes on now. Lookout Mountain Studio. The picture, many of the pictures, like, you know, you remember the film Trinity and Beyond, where they pull this bomb, they pull a little boy out of a building. There's a bunch of men. And I said, it doesn't look to me like they're handling a four-ton bomb.
Oh, that's right. They were wearing shorts, weren't they? And
yeah, they were wearing shorts. And they pull it out of the building, and they go around the turn, and they go down the sidewalk, and it looks like it's so easy. I said, you couldn't handle a bomb like that.
It's about the weight of a car, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was on a little cart with little wheels. Now, this is important because these pictures that I found, they show them loading little boy onto an airplane and also big fat boy. They have a cart with big wheels. It's like truck wheels. And they pull it with a vehicle. Nothing at all like they show in Trinity and Beyond. Nothing, anything like it. It's a cart. It doesn't have the little tiny wheels. It has big automobile-type wheels or truck wheels. And they pull it with a truck. And they pull it, actually, in the pictures, it looks like they're pulling it for a few miles. Not just, you know, from a building over to the strip. It looks like it's a whole convoy of vehicles went with it and escorted it.
It's quite, yeah.
And another thing in those pictures is, they show in Trinity and Beyond, they show a building with straight sides. And you think, well, you know, most buildings have straight sides. But at Tinian, they did not. At Tinian had what you call the Quonset hut. And there's not a lot of pictures, but when they show them pulling that out of that building is not like any building that was on Tinian. And that looks like a building, I would say, probably more like a building you'd find at Lookout Mountain Studio. And it's the same thing with the picture of the bomb where it's sitting there with the covers off and the two men looking at it. It's inside of a building with straight walls. And I say that's Lookout Mountain Studio. That's not Tinian like they claim it is.
That's great stuff. Hey, can I ask you about the Indianapolis? Do you think that was deliberately left to sink because the sailors, I mean, my guess is the sailors knew that the bombs were fake and they were going to tell everybody back at home. You know, USS Indianapolis, when it returned from Tinian back to, it was going across the Atlantic.
I have no doubt in my mind that they would deliberately let people die to cover something. Roosevelt let the Japanese attack Pearl Harbor. He knew they was attacking. He let it happen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They'll deliberately kill people. And of course, Johnson and the USS Liberty. But in World War II, they would have done it. Yes, they would have. I also believe that they put people in, you know, if you heard these stories that during the Great Depression in the United States, they put people in concentration camps and deliberately starved them to death. About 7 or 8 million people. I can believe it.
Well, in the USA?
I got no proof it happened, but I can believe it. Yes, I can believe the Indianapolis was deliberately allowed to be sunk, and I can believe it. And maybe there was no bomb on it at all.
Yeah, exactly. What is your background? Can you give me some idea of your background? I'm just out of general interest. I mean, don't say anything you don't want to sort of publicize.
Well, I'm just kind of a college dropout, and I got in electronics and worked in electronics for a while, but now I'm just a kind of a farmer.
Great stuff.
So I've never done anything in academics or something spectacular. I know I'm not as smart as you.
Well, thanks.
Ray West goes into a lot of things, and a lot deeper than me.
Oh yeah, Ray appears to have a scientific background, and there's no doubt that he's got a lot of depth to what he's saying. I'm just looking at some of the posts on that you participated and may have initiated, Daniel, on nuclear power doubts, nuclear disasters, safe power. Is nuclear power a hoax? Do you want to speak a little bit about, say, Fukushima? Do you believe that occurred as we are told, or do you believe that that's more fakery?
Well, the first thing that I noticed about Fukushima, I found out, is, unless my information is wrong, is that they actually had an Israeli security team there. And I questioned this with Ray. Is all the nuclear plants in the world guarded by Israeli security forces?
I think
it's very possible the thing was just deliberately sabotaged and blown up.
Mm-hmm. But do you think there was any nuclear material at all in there?
I doubt it.
Yeah.
I guess things are radioactive because you can tell it with a Geiger counter. But I don't think it's anywhere near as dangerous as what they try to make out it to be.
Mm-hmm. And this goes for both of you, is the Geiger counter, that's another super simplistic instrument that almost seems ridiculous in its description, that it makes clicking noises when it detects radiation.
Yeah. Can I interject here?
Yes.
The Geiger counter uses you've got a little tube and it relies on charged particles, I mean electrons, something with a charge, but you can't detect neutrons like that because they're not charged. And mm-hmm. a lot of these radioactive things are supposed to be neutrons flying around.
Yes.
So there's a problem there. Just a point. I mean, I try to get people to comment on this, but no official people will comment. But it's much more difficult to detect neutrons than any other thing. Just a point, that's all.
No, yeah, and my point is that it because nuclear energy and even electricity for that matter is invisible, we're really just taking somebody's word for it that they really can detect anything called nuclear radiation. It's almost like they're waving a magic wand around and it makes noises that nobody can prove or disprove that isn't of the highest of scientific minds. So to me it's almost like a magic trick.
Well, that reminds me of something.
Sure.
When the guy up at Chicago, I guess it was Enrico Fermi.
Yes.
When he demonstrated his atomic pile, and if you read the description of it, he gets a bunch of high school or college students to observe. You know, there's 20 or so of them sitting in a circle or something, and he goes in there. He walks in there and he full plays with his slide rule a little bit, and he turns a couple knobs, and he says that they start hearing this click, 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 and it starts getting faster, click, 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 and he says, and he plays with his slide rule some more, and he says, it's a chain reaction, and all the students cheered and applauded. And I'm reading that, and I thought, how do I know the thing that's making the clicks is actually coming from something that's radioactive, or somebody's just not stepping back there, pressing on a button real quick or something and making it click?
Yeah.
And you got a bunch of gullible high school, college students. That doesn't really sound to me like a rigorous proof of anything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It sounds like a magic show.
Yeah. You got a charismatic guy strutting around with a slide rule, and the slide rule makes him look intelligent. And
yes.
I guess he was intelligent, but was it really? Did it really happen?
Mm-hmm.
And another thing is they have.
Do you think that's where the whole? Sorry to interrupt. Do you think that's where the whole Geiger counter concept came from with the clicking?
Well, that seems to be the first account of it.
Yeah. Something as silly as that. Something literally silly.
It's part of the imagery, isn't it? With films, you get the same sort of thing. When computers were new, they had flashing lights. You know, all these things like The Man from U.N.C.L.E. had flashing lights as computers, and James Bond and stuff. So clicking radiation is the same sort of tradition.
I remember those computers. I actually saw one time, an IBM 360. It had a whole bunch of neon lights on the front of it. This was about 1978. And it had a whole big panel probably about 8 feet square. And I looked at that and I thought, what's all that mean? Did somebody understand it, or was it just put up there? You know, it's like a guy told me, I was looking in these boxes. This was 1978 at college. And they have a box there on the floor that's about 2 feet wide and 2 feet tall and 2 feet, you know, about a cube. And I looked down in the little louvers down in there, and down inside there was just a little tiny thing that may be about as big as a shoebox. And I asked the guy, and it said IBM, and I asked the guy one time, he was a programmer, and I said, you know, a few years later, I said, why, I was in college, and I was looking down in these boxes. The box was big, but there was anything in there. And he said, well, you know, when IBM sells a computer for $100,000, they found out that, you know, people expect it to be big.
Sure.
It was just... And
they didn't want to pay for a little box. They're willing to pay more because it's so big. But if it's a little box,
right,
they would think of – it's just simple psychology, isn't it?
Yeah.
The bigger, the better.
Yeah, that's all I remember looking.
I got a question for both of you guys, because we're told that the world is going back and forth in nuclear power, and I think Fukushima was what I call a psyop, Daniel. I think it's a psychological operation that's controlled by media. So they're in one point they're pushing nuclear power, and then there's supposedly a tug of war where we have these nuclear incidents that are trying to dissuade the world's masses from nuclear power, and it's just a false tug of war that they're creating, a false dichotomy, a false Hegelian principle here. So if nuclear power is to be phased out, as we're told, even though we're all in agreement that it probably doesn't produce hardly any power at all, what is the deal with the acceleration of solar and wind power? Because I think logically we can see they're intermittent power sources. They're not reliable for base load. So is this just yet another swindle of money? Or is there any legitimacy to their use in the grid?
Yeah, we do have some discussion of that on nuclides in the energy part of it. And I think we concluded, I mean... They subsidize them, don't they? They subsidize wind power
massively, massively.
Yeah, was it massive?
Money.
I know that, you know, I think it's the father of the British MP, this Jewish bloke, has got gets rent for these things stuck on his land. You know, he gets millions for it, I think.
Well, we're told that, say, that one of the cheapest per kilowatt hour of power generation is coal. I think it's all the way down to 3 cents a kilowatt, where the subsidies are close to, in our province, I've heard 80 and 90 cents a kilowatt by a factor of 30, 33, some occult number. So it's ridiculous.
If you're asking if it's a fake. Oh, well, sorry. After
yes.
You.
Go ahead, Daniel. I live near a big wind farm. It's like 177 turbines. Mm-hmm. And I walk down the road almost every day, and I can see them. And there's, when the wind is blowing, a good strong breeze, they're usually all shut off.
Yeah.
And then when the wind is zero, they're usually all running.
Yes, I've seen that too. We've got a couple around my location, and it never corresponds.
No, and they're hooked up to there's a coal burning plant up there, and they're hooked up to the lines
grid.
That's coming from that coal burning power plant, and if you, in my opinion, and also I asked some people about it, and they said by email. And they said that the wind farm does not have to report to the government or anybody how much electricity they buy. They only have to report how much they make. And I said, well, how do I know? I asked the question, how do I know they're not just buying coal-burning produced electricity and then selling it as wind power produced electricity and therefore claiming 1.4 cents a kilowatt hour in tax incentives reduction, that it's not just fraudulent, the scamulent the practice that what they're doing. And nobody
sure.
can wants to even look at it.
Yeah. But maybe, okay. Ray, you can answer. From a technical point of view, how can solar and wind be reliable enough to make any difference?
Well, I think with solar, it's a bit different because there are very sunny countries. If you could find some way of harvesting the sun in the Sahara, presumably it could be economically viable. Can I just make this point? I remember saying this to you when we were speaking earlier, that there is actually no shortage of energy, technically speaking. If you look at if you measure the mass of wind, I know, okay, it doesn't weigh much. You take the half mv squared of air movement, you get a hell of a lot of energy. And there's more energy just in a few seconds of air circulation on the Earth, than more energy than's been used up by mankind in its whole history, you know, of burning stuff and using oil. There's no shortage.
How to harvest it?
The trick is to, without being too clunky. I mean, if you look at electric batteries, for example, they're ridiculous, aren't they? But, I mean, that's a fundamental research thing. It wouldn't surprise me if physics can get over its present kind of bullshit. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't surprise me if there's some way of harvesting it only in tiny amounts. You know, if you can only harness 0.1% of sunlight, say, that's still a significant amount. That's what plants do. Plants are not very efficient, but I mean they power the whole of life, really.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that I'm just hoping there'll be some kind of breakthrough there. That's assuming that energy is needed. A lot of countries don't need so much, do they? I mean, in Canada, you need energy just to keep warm.
Yes.
There's a lot of third world countries. You know, you don't even need. You can, as long as you can live overnight, you don't need to plan ahead very much, do you? This is the basis of a lot of genetic theories that blacks have low IQs because they don't need to have, they didn't have to plan ahead.
They don't have to survive.
Well, have you ever heard the candy bar test?
No.
They did on black children and white children, and they say that blacks will not plan ahead. They say that they'll offer a candy bar to a black child and say, I'll give you this candy bar today, but if you wait 2 or 3 days, I'll give you two candy bars. And they say a lot of white kids will say, I'll just wait. But blacks will hardly ever do it. They'll always take what they get right now. And
well, I don't want to get into it. I don't want to get into too many racial debates here. I think I've heard similar tests.
What are we
tests?
Talking about now, okay?
Yeah. Yeah, well, we're talking about wind power and solar power, whether it's a real or it's a swindle.
What I think is, well, there's a couple theories about the wind power. One is that the elite, whoever you would call them, have their underground places to hide out in when everything comes to pieces, and they've got the wind power hooked up to their underground places. And that's what they're being built for. And, the thing of it is that they're going to find out they ain't going to get enough power to run anything.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think much of that theory.
Yeah, me neither. Okay. That sounds like a story. I'm more talking about the technical aspects, what use it is.
Well,
mm-hmm.
I don't think you're going to run a tech. I don't think that you can maintain your industrial society on solar and wind.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not going to do it. Now, our ancestors used solar power. They cut firewood, and they grew oats and fed their horses, and that's solar power. And it works that way.
Mm-hmm.
But the way you're not going to grow corn and make alcohol and run your automobiles, it's just not going to work.
Yeah, that's true. First class, my man. What's your view about oil? We had a discussion on abiotic oil. I think Verioc started that. You know, the received view is oil was caused by the decay over very long periods of vegetation, you know, of trees, plants, what have you. But there's an alternative theory, which I think Thomas Gold is credited with, that there's a lot of hydrocarbon around when the Earth was young, and it's still there underground. So if you dig deeply enough, you can find it. Any views on that?
Well, I don't have enough data to.
Oh, okay.
I think that what we got is just running out.
Well,
I don't think there's an inexhaustible supply someplace that we just haven't tapped into yet.
Do you not believe that oil is constantly being regenerated by the Earth?
No, I don't believe that.
Okay.
I don't completely discount it, but I just don't believe it. I haven't seen any proof of it. Velikovsky, did you ever hear Velikovsky's theory? He
was yes.
He said a comet came by that was full of hydrocarbon and dumped the hydrocarbon on the Earth.
No, that's bullshit, isn't it?
the thing that it looks to me like is, if something's way down deep in the Earth, how are you going to get to it? It's getting harder and harder to get oil, it seems, unless they're just lying to us.
Well, there is a theory which I only heard recently that there is very deep drilling, which was pioneered by Russia, and in fact there is oil down there. It's not, the thing is, it's another one of these bottleneck things, isn't it? It's one of these things where it's very hard to find evidence. I mean, you can't just look and see if there's oil down there, or how much there is.
No, you're at the mercy of those that supposedly control the supply and control the exploration, and it's only that the price is controlled.
If you have a secret stash, you can keep it quiet, can't you? That's the other thing. What was I going to talk about? Hey, do you mind if I just divert a bit onto this Jewish issue here, just for a bit? I know you're not keen on it.
Well, just a bit, because
Okay, mm-hmm. I've got two quotations here.
Plus, we have first-class skeptic on the line. I want to make use of his information.
Yes, I've just got. It's just that I've got a script, a sort of script, and I thought I ought to give it a fair mention. One of them is this thing by Bob Whitaker. It's the what he calls the mantra: Asia for the Asians, Africa for the Africans, white countries for everybody. Everybody says there's this race problem. Everybody says this race problem will be solved when the third world pours into every white country and only into white countries. Anti-racist is code word for anti-white. It's Bob Whitaker. Now, I mean, that's a kind of summary of what he sees as happened in the USA since, I suppose, about 1900. And this is connected up with this business of money and also with nukes, because if you keep people in fear with nuclear stuff and it's Jewish controlled, that's a big leverage point. Okay, I'll just sort of make that point. And there's one other thing here I'd like to quote, which is from the Occidental Observer. I'll make this short. I'll quote half of her. So somebody called Mary Thomas, and she says, "White Americans fought their German brothers during the World Wars and then gave Jews a country of their own. And to thank us, they give us the genocide of the white race. The evil I'm talking about here, the betrayal of the goodwill of decent whites here in America, who never meant any harm whatsoever to the Jews. The evil is beyond my imagination. As we head into the cannibals' pot, you can bet that we're going to take the Jews down with us. Trust me, when whites figure out what has happened, there's going to be hell to pay. The irony is that we loved and admired the Jews." Okay, and then she talks about things like abortion, feminism, affirmative action, and so on. And this fits in, you see, with the nuke thing. If you remember, there was the Samson option, so-called, has been quoted, and some Jews have made it perfectly clear that in their view, they're perfectly happy to wipe out all human life, all non-Jewish human life on Earth. So mm-hmm.
Some Muslims want to get rid of non-Muslims. So I think there's psychopaths in every group, and I think it's a distraction. I know you think there's lots of evidence, but I can get people on that think there's a lot of other evidence that other groups are running the thing. So I think is a distraction.
Well, I mean, I'm likely evidence-based. It's like, I'll give you an analogy. It's like after oxygen was discovered by Priestley, whenever it was, 1750 or something, there was a whole lot of apparently unrelated phenomena which were brought under the idea of oxidation. For example, rust. People found out that rusting was oxidation, and also breathing and the generation of body heat, that's oxidation. Mm-hmm. So is the, paper going yellow, that kind of thing. And fish being underwater is a product of oxygen dissolving water. And in the same sort of way, if you can get a lot of different threads, for example, nukes, the federal reserve thing, the consistent, insistent propaganda about race mixing in Hollywood, the you know, the facts about Jewish racism in Israel. It just hangs together, and at some point it makes a convincing hypothesis. You know, that's what I would say. That's the connection with the nukes, anyway. The nukes thing is definitely Jewish, and so is the Samson option promulgated by Jews as well. So that's why.
Well, it's just okay. They're hoax, and there's Jews involved, but there's, like I said, we've had debates on whether there's Jesuits involved, and even the Jews are invested in a lot of these Jesuit orders. So there's really no way. We've had debates on it before. I don't really want to get too distracted, and I know that's a central theme, but I'm really talking here about nuclear hoaxes and nuclear power as a way for those that rule over us to control us. That's all.
Let me just make a final little comment, which, in my view, the state of the world now is rather similar to what it was before the Reformation, because, you know, Catholicism at that time had its own language and its own beliefs, its own sort of rule book, and it was international, and it kind of dominated quite a lot of countries. I mean, it seemed like the world at the time, but it did include the Americas and, you know, Europe and most of, well, Eastern Europe and so on. But the Catholicism, it was perceived as being corrupt and dishonest, and the Reformation happened. And I think we're going through a similar process. I think there'll be either something like expulsion of Jews, or they'll have to pay back their Holocaust fraud money, or they might even get kind of shot, as in, after all, they were quite happy to shoot all the white elite in Russia, millions of them. So that might happen. I just thought I'd put that in because it's part of a consistent message.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but I'd like to hear. Sorry, well, I'd like to hear a bit more from Dan, because I'm still fascinated by him. I've never communicated with him before.
Well, let's try to find a topic that Dan might want to comment on back on the Nuke Lies website.
Dan, I remember you commented on the bombing of, you know, Japan bombing Pearl Harbor. I think you said that you actually met somebody who told you that it was known to be a fake at the time.
Yes.
There was a guy on, there was a preacher called Pete Peters. And he died, I think, a year ago. But he had a man that he interviewed that was at Pearl Harbor. I didn't know the man personally. But the guy talked about what went on at Pearl Harbor. He said they had orders from the White House to take all the anti-aircraft ammunition and lock it up and put away all the anti-aircraft guns. And he said there was like there was back pay for like 6 months. They had raised their pay of the sailors, but they didn't pay them for like 6 months. And he said right on Friday, they gave everybody all their back pay. So everybody was out partying on Saturday night, and when Sunday morning came and the Japanese attacked, they was all having a hangover.
Right. So you're saying they were disarmed, in fact?
Yeah, they were disarmed. It was and he ordered all the ships to park into the harbor. So it was ordering all this stuff, and it was all set up. And he said there was two aircraft carriers that was supposed to be in. Now, the story he tells is that the commanders of the two aircraft carriers smelled a rat and just disobeyed the order. They were supposed to come into port, and they just flat out just disobeyed it. And that's why the two aircraft carriers weren't in port when it happened. But this man said he found a shot down Japanese plane, and they showed a map with all the ships and the two aircraft carriers in port, but they weren't there. But the map showed them there, and he looked at that map and realized that the whole thing was set up, and that was clear back at the time it happened. Now, that's what I was telling. I don't know the guy. But if it's on an interview...
Well, I buy into that. I think Pearl Harbor was definitely an orchestrated event. Not necessarily media fakery, but it definitely was a pre-planned, prearranged. Do you think anyone died on any of those ships?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I did have an uncle in Pearl Harbor, but he never talked about what happened. I don't know if he was there before or after. That might have been what I mentioned.
How widely known would you say this is, what you just said? I mean, I believe the Liberty
maybe
survivors...
Maybe one out of 1,000 people might... I don't know.
No, I mean, the no, Liberty
I don't think
survivors...
anybody... Other survivors? I don't know.
Sorry, no, the survivors of the attack on the Liberty have only just got together and formed some kind of group, possibly because of internet, I suppose. I just wondered if there was something similar with Pearl Harbor, or maybe it's just too long ago now.
That's too late for that, I think.
It'd be about 90, wouldn't they?
It'd be in their 80s.
Mm.
I did see a guy on television. He said the one ship turned upside down, and there was people trapped in there, and he said they was banging on the side of the ship.
Hmm.
And it took about 3 or 4 days for him to die.
Oh, God.
Well,
I think it was, you know, Roosevelt told Winston Churchill, I'll get the United States into the war. But Winston Churchill, or Roosevelt told the American public, we're not going to get into the war. So he was lying to them.
Well, it's like Wilson, wasn't it? President Wilson.
Yeah, he campaigned on not going to war, and they went to war.
Mm. It's terrible. Should we try other subjects? What about any views on the Shakespeare authorship issue? I quite like that because it's 500 years old, and all the self-interest no longer exists, except as a career structure, and yet all these Shakespeare people will not debate the De Vere idea at all.
Well, I listened to a show with someone, I believe, from the Edward De Vere camp, and I'm not terribly interested in that whole fakery or that whole who is behind Shakespeare debate, because, number one, I don't even like most of the Shakespeare stuff, but to be honest with you, but it is fascinating as a method of controlling a story, that's for sure.
They make their money out of repeating the same story. It's like a lot of education. It's interesting from that point of view.
Yes, I agree. And I listened to a talk show where somebody was talking about Edward De Vere, and I think there's a movie called Anonymous that is speaking to that issue.
Yes, it was a few years ago.
And I thought it was fairly convincing, but...
Okay.
I don't really. Well, I'm not really too worried about either way. Who is Shakespeare and who's behind it? Because I'm not even interested in the actual end result, the plays and whatnot.
Well, it's impossible to understand the plays without knowing what really
what
happened.
And of course,
most school teachers aren't interested in that. They're just interested in repeating what they're supposed to say, which is a.
Oh, I agree. And that goes back to those that invented schools, and I've had that discussion before about the Prussians and creating schools to stifle critical thinking and just encourage rote repetition. So that was a way they could get soldiers to obey orders. It just was a continuation. So because it's fairly anti-human. It's fairly anti-human to kill somebody, and the only way they could keep the soldiers from turning tail is they had to precondition them to take orders and do as they're told.
Yeah, that sounds anti-German to me. I don't think... I mean, Germany has a tradition of, you know, a hell of a lot of original thought, so I don't buy that personally.
Well, I think, it was a Prussian thing. I don't know where...
Or Hessian or something, that's right. Yeah, interrupting?
Well, I'm
go ahead, Dan. Go ahead, Dan. Interrupt.
At the old 1911 Encyclopedia Britannica, it has an article about the Jesuits, and they pretty much describe the Jesuits as being the one who came up with a modern educational system of 12 years. They had and teaching humanities. They pretty much lay it as something the Jesuits invented.
Right. Well,
yes, that's right. Marx was educated by Jesuits, I think, wasn't he? And Voltaire, I think they had quite a few. Oh, Descartes, I think. Is that right?
But Dan, I want to know if you have any additional comments about the any of the nuclearized topics, because that was definitely your where you made a lot of your big contributions. Do you have any more comments on nuclear weapons or nuclear power in general, where it's going?
I'd like to say some of the things that if somebody has never looked into this before, what mm-hmm. they look at. And one of the first things you can look at is you can go on the internet and look up pictures and say a Tokyo firebombing and Hiroshima bombing, and you can look at pictures of Tokyo after it's been bombed, mm-hmm. Tokyo was firebombed, and compare them with the pictures of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and you see that it's pretty much the same thing. The modern cement buildings survived almost without minor damage, some of them, while all around them is rubble. The rubble was the houses that were made out of paper and wood mm-hmm. with a clay tile roof. But a modern cement, steel, fire-resistant structure was not harmed, or not much. Also, you can notice that a lot of the windows were not broken. You'll find a lot of unbroken windows, and you'll find almost all of the chimneys are still standing, which would indicate there was no explosion. Why would a stone or brick chimney stand up and resist an explosion? It just looks like a chimney that's standing after a house burns down. You can look up something called, another thing is you can look up something called criticality accidents. It's on Wikipedia in a couple of places, where in the laboratory they accidentally cobbled together more than the critical mass of uranium or something. There was one especially, I think 1953, where they cobbled together the same uranium that was used in Little Boy. They actually had more uranium than was in Little Boy, but it didn't explode.
Mm-hmm.
So this thing about when you reach a critical mass, you get an explosion. Well, there's been a lot of criticality accidents, and none of them exploded. And I've never found any that exploded. Something might have got hot.
There's a little bomb for you.
Was that you?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
There's another thing you can... There's a guy named Crawford Sams. Crawford Sams was the doctor in occupied Japan, and he went there, and he says, there's an interview, a 1979 interview, and he says that he was told to play up the statistics of how many people died. And he said, for the next 6 months, if somebody got run over by a truck, and he counted that as a fatality of the bomb, and he got it up to 76,000 or so people. And he says, probably when the bomb first exploded, now he believed it was an atomic bomb, but he said probably only about 2,000 people died initially. The rest died from fires.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an interview. He gives a pretty lengthy interview, and he also says that there's no increase in leukemia.
Right.
He says that in the thing. So there's about three different things that a beginner could look into and start to think about this bombing and this hoax.
Mm-hmm.
Can I do a sort of summary of the
yes.
psychology of revisionism and people who are skeptical?
Let's do that. Yes, let's do that, because we're going to have to wind up the call, because we're getting on.
I hope you've had your breakfast.
I had it before, but I'm now moving into the lunch phase of my digestion, I think.
Yeah, there's an interesting distinction I'd like to make between overview pieces and detail, which is important for revisionism. An overview piece, for example, on my YouTubes, I've got one about Shakespeare authorship thing. Now, you could mm-hmm. spend your whole life on just one of the plays, but an overview piece looks at all the aspects, not necessarily in great detail, just a bit of them, and resituates the whole thing. It's like shuffling a kaleidoscope, so the pieces mm-hmm. rearrange themselves. And a good example is that De Vere lecture. There's another one, actually, it's a piece called Did 6 Million Really Die, which is only 30 pages or something. mm-hmm. and it looks at all the Holocaust things and sort of takes them to pieces. And that, mm-hmm. in contradiction to that, there's the really detailed people. And one example is Harold Hillman in his books on biological techniques go into very great intricate detail, as of course you have to at some point. I mean, you need both, really. You need an overview to sort of situate all the pieces, but you also need to be sure that the techniques are right. Another example is David Irving, who does very detailed histories. For example, his history of Hitler during the Second World War involved making a card index of every single day of the war, so he knew where Hitler was every single day. So you get there is that quite important distinction between the overview. I mean, for example, suppose you want to do an overview, a crit of the Catholic Church. You've got a whole lot of stuff. You've got the historical, like a whole list of popes, which may or may not be true. You've got the music and the buildings. You've got the theology, you know. You've got the question of whether Christ ever existed, which I don't believe, in fact. And a good overview piece will look at all of these things and kind of, go over it and be convincing. And
so that's that's on your YouTube site, right?
I don't have one about Christianity. I've just kind of invented that, but I've got the one on De Vere. It's on my YouTube site. Have a look at my site. It's quite interesting. YouTube's there.
Yeah, I've got a link to it on our show page there. Oh, sorry about that. That's one of your videos okay. playing. Yeah.
Another thing is you have to have a kind of stick to it, evenness. I mean, like Bradley Smith has run his Committee for Open Debate on the Holocaust mm-hmm. since about the late 90s, 1998 or something. And he has every... there's too much of it. Some of these formats are not so good. The bulletin board format that they use means you get the same stuff repeated over and over again by people who come in later. But mm-hmm. you've got to have this... You've got to have the distinction between the overview and the great detail. You've got to have a sort of stick-to-itiveness. Mm-hmm. And you also have to have a passion for collecting evidence, I think, as well. You have to occasionally sort of collect a book or an article or a video or something that might be relevant. And I think mm-hmm. another thing you need actually is general knowledge. You need to be, in order to sort out the crap, you have to have some general attitude which enables you to filter out stuff which is basically appears to you obvious nonsense, but have a good reason for it. Mm-hmm. Is that any help? I don't know if that's
No, it's a good help. I'm looking at your website now. You've got a lot of playlists with different topics, which is a pretty good way of organizing things.
Well, I do my best. It's difficult, isn't it? There's so much stuff.
Yes, and absolutely. Yes, it's tremendous.
A lot of websites force you to drill down. You have to click on several things, and you can easily lose stuff there.
It's very easy to get lost in these websites. They're absolute mazes when you're trying to get into it. Even just the forum, the whole concept of forums like Nuke Lies, it's difficult to extract information. You're like drilling down mining shafts trying to find out, and then you get lost when you're at the bottom. You have to come back out and go back down again.
Well, I did my best to arrange it in a logical format. And in fact, it's quite a narrow topic. It's a bit like the Holocaust. I mean, some of these topics are smaller than others, so however much detail there is, it's kind of in principle you can arrange it under 10 or 20 subheadings with a bit of luck. Is Daniel still there? I wonder if that described him at all. Is he locked off?
Daniel still there?
Yeah.
Does that describe you at all? Are you a?
I was just thinking that in politics, religion, science, too much is accepted by authority. Well, this is so because so-and-so said it. We all evolved out of Africa because Leakey said it. And yes. Everything is based on somebody's authority. Nobody will take time to look or think about something. And if something's too big to look at, like the atomic pile, people will say, of course atomic bombs exist. And they say, have you ever seen one explode? Well, no. But they believe it. Because they just accept things of what they're told on television or what they're told at school or what they're told at church. They accept things on authority
yes.
and don't think for themselves anymore.
Well, they're convinced that there are bodies that think for them that are in place. Scientific bodies, medical bodies. They were always reassured that somebody else is taking care of things. And that's the great downfall. So when it comes to medicine, we think our doctor knows best. No point in questioning him. He must have looked into it. So that's how my 9/11 evolution went on. For years, I figured somebody's investigating this. Every now and then, there's little stories in the media that they own that someone is investigating it. And because of it, this bad thing happened to him. You're always under the impression that it's being taken care of. But quite clearly, a lot of these things are not taken care of, and they just rely on that meme that they put out that everything is under control and people will just carry on with their own daily lives. And the other thing, of course, is they create situations where we're all busy just trying to survive in the money system that they've created. So there is no downtime, and any downtime they try and fill up with bread and circuses, whether it be entertainment, sports. Really, there's no time left to critically think and critically reason. So every now and then there's breakout people like Ray and yourself that actually spend time, and you guys are quite rare in your ability to collate and reason. And it's clear that you're quite rare, because if you do a survey of the internet, which one would think that more and more is becoming representative of the world's population and the world's thinkers, there's a real absence or lack of critical thinking out there. There really is a very small community.
Yeah, that's true.
And as such,
probably always has been.
Yes, well, and as such, you're not a threat in any way to the power structure. And this talk show is no threat, because we're only speaking to a very tiny number of people. And you can approach very intelligent and what we think as intelligent and very well-educated people, and they won't even give you 2 minutes of your critical thinking time. So,
well, there's another thing that I've noticed is there's a lot of people out there that don't believe that, and I see a lot of them on the forums, they don't believe that NASA ever landed any men on the moon.
Mm-hmm.
But they will not consider that maybe the atomic thing is a hoax.
Right.
Or they'll know. I knew a guy that he knew positively that Lee Harvey Oswald didn't shoot JFK. But when the Oklahoma City bombing occurred, he would not even consider the idea that maybe the guy was a patsy. I forget his name now. And he wouldn't even consider
Timothy McVeigh. Not only that, well, here's another thing, and this is all controlled by the whole psychological operation, because they put out the whistleblowers, they put out the controlled opposition, they put out what they want you to think if you are not going to go with the official party line. They literally create gatekeeping operations where they corral critical thinkers and make them stop. But have you ever got to the point as a critical thinker yourself, well, if 9/11 was a completely faked event in every way, including the victims, which is where I'm at, Daniel, I don't know if you're familiar with my position, but take that back towards JFK. Why does one believe that he was even shot? Why does not one believe that it was just completely manufactured? And if you look at the evidence, the Zapruder film, which came out many years later, which gave them tons of time to tweak and make that full of its own conspiracy candy, why would you even think that JFK was shot? Because
his head flew back and then he slumped over.
But you saw
the hospital.
But you saw that on a video years later.
Yeah. And you're right. There's all this evidence that it hid away somewhere until 30 years later, and then it comes out.
Unless you were there,
a lot of new evidence about the Holocaust now too, and stuff.
All right.
We just found something. Yeah, I don't know.
No, they just manufactured something. And
they manufactured. Now you mentioned maybe Mm-hmm. The victims were fake. Now,
yes.
I never thought about that on 9/11, but Sandy Hook.
But why wouldn't you think
really
about it on 9/11?
Whether anybody was killed at all at Sandy Hook.
There's
they wouldn't
no,
even let the parents see their children. How do I know they just didn't kidnap them and sell them into a sex slave ring or something?
But
and the same thing at the LaToya, at Toya Island.
LaToya,
where
yeah.
Supposedly killed 67 people. I don't know that he did it or not.
No, you don't. You are relying on the media that is controlled by the military. So there's unless you were there, you have no way of proving or disproving. It's like these things are templates. They are done in the same way each and every time. There's really nothing to debate. It's only logical if you take one template and examine it, like 9/11, which you have to examine because it was put before the whole world, then you can only have to use your critical thinking to extend that to other psyops. So,
Holmes in the Aurora Theater. He supposedly shot 50 people.
Right.
Killed 10. And I thought, why didn't somebody jump on him and knock his head against a chair or something?
Of course, because probably...
There's so many stories, I cannot believe them. And also, a lot of these shooters, like the guy at Sandy Hook, how did he get to be an expert at shooting a gun? How did Holmes get to be an expert at shooting a gun? How did that guy get to be an expert that shot Gifford, supposedly? And they say he never even shot a .22 rifle. All of a sudden, these people pop up as an expert rifleman and shoot things that it would take training of years to do it.
Of course. They're all lone gunmen. They all fit the same template, Daniel. And if you should come to my website and click on the links and go to another website that I think Ray would recommend, cluesforum.info. They're all exposing media fakery. These events didn't happen. They are complete psyops where all the questioners are gatekeeped and managed quite successfully. So it all speaks to the same issue. They're all done the same way. There's really no mystery to it. And you should really check out those websites because I think as a critical thinker, you will be shocked at how completely manufactured all of this is. So...
Okay. I think actually that you're taking an unduly pessimistic view. I mean, if you were serious that it was impossible to ever detect the truth, then you wouldn't you wouldn't be trying to reveal the truth. I mean, in fact, there are all kinds of leaks due to eyewitnesses or people knowing things, or for that matter, just finding illogicalities in the positions. And actually,
well,
just tells me there's
Yeah, I don't know if it was you or someone else saying I take a pessimistic view. I think somebody said I'm very pessimistic, but actually I'm optimistic in the sense that if I can see through it and I'm not a complex individual, I think others can see through these things as well. So
yeah, but if you really believed that it's impossible to disprove these things, then you wouldn't. You're being inconsistent. You obviously mm-hmm. believe that you can by making an effort. Work out what really happened.
Yes.
I wanted to say something.
Go ahead.
About Breivik and LaToya Island. So the story is, in an hour or an hour and a half, he shot 67 people, which is like shooting and killing someone every minute and a half.
Yes.
As soon as I heard that, you know, nobody even does a simple math in their head. You know, in an hour and a half, he shoots 67 people. That's a person every minute and a half. You can't do it. It's just something a person. You imagine a bunch of young kids, most of them were young, running around, and you're trying to shoot them and kill them. You couldn't do it. You just can't do it.
And, I agree.
But nobody even stops to do a little simple thing in their head like that. And most people have never. I mean, I've gone out and shot a deer. You see, like 20 deer standing there. You might shoot one, and the rest of them take off. And I know very
luck.
Well
and,
you're
yeah.
not going to shoot that many.
And good luck. And good luck. Yeah, good luck catching them, right? Because they're gone.
Right.
When they're gone, they're gone.
And another thing was, if you go back and look at the pictures they put on the internet, they showed a picture of a guy walking across this rocky shore, and there was little blotched out places, and it says Breivik walks among the corpses. And I looked at that, and I told everybody on the forum, I was on some forum, I said, there is no picture of a dead person here. There are no dead bodies here. And you know they wouldn't believe me? I said, look at this picture. There are no dead bodies there. It's just blanked out places, and you're told it's dead bodies. And no, and it's like they can't believe that.
Yeah, Daniel, on that's there is one of the Norway Utøya Island shooting on Nukelize. It's on the current affairs thing, section 2 of it, the current stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It started by you, 19th of August 2011. That was all that time ago.
Yes.
Well, can I just point out there are two
I was just going to readdress what you said, Ray. And I know, I suppose I might have a conflicted, I might have a conflicted appearance as to how I'm approaching this. I'm convinced that, well, you're right, I'm conflicted. So I think, I wouldn't be doing this if I didn't think there was a good purpose to it, and that was to mainly, I really, really wanted to just connect with people like-minded that, are critical thinkers that are seeing through this. So all I'm saying is I'm not sure that the masses are able to break through the matrix, as it were. So
I understand what you're saying. I'm not sure that's not a bit condescending, but on the other hand, I'm not sure that it's not completely true. So fair enough, yeah. I was just going to say there are two types of revisionists. There are ones who concentrate just on one subject,
mm-hmm.
and others who kind of broaden it, and the sort of thing that Dan was describing, where somebody takes a view on JFK but nothing else, is quite common. I mean, I met some AIDS people, and they would not consider whether, for example, polio was caused by DDT, which it might have been DDT in the water. They've got their subject and they just stick to it. And I mean, David Irving is an example. He's a Christian, and I told him once that Jesus probably didn't ever exist, and he got really annoyed. So I mean.
I read a theory about Jesus Christ. He was a Roman agent. He went into Pilate, as the Bible says, he went into Pilate, and they brought somebody else out, so he was never crucified.
Well,
the guy that was crucified wasn't Jesus, and it was just a thing to get everybody to submit to government and say, well, you know, your Savior's going to come way in the future. And that is one thing I see a problem with Christianity. Your Savior is going to come way in the future. Don't worry about today. Don't try to change anything today. Because
it seems like a manipulation, doesn't it? Yes. Well, I would like to label myself a broad revisionist under Ray's labeling system. I definitely, once I've accepted quite clearly that 9/11 was a completely faked event, I have no problem reviewing all past historical memes. I really have no problem with that. So that's why I'm quite open and quite willing to accept the nuke lies information. And we didn't really get into the big lies form. We're going to have you back, Ray, just to discuss that. And
yes, I'll be pleased to be back.
I'd like to get into a lot of your topics about AIDS. I have no problem understanding and accepting any of the stuff.
Well, next time, maybe later in the day, we might get more. We might get to. I'd quite like to tackle a whole load of callers just to see what they say. But
well, then we would.
I'm getting to the end of my fatigue thing here, and it's 3 hours and 27 minutes. So in 3 minutes, I suggest we stop. But I'm just my idea.
I agree. I need a dewatering break as well. So I have no problem. So why don't we just sum up today's call, if you'd like to say anything, Daniel, first, to conclude?
Well, I started with my first doubtful thing was when I heard a guy on a shortwave radio years ago say there was no moon landing.
Uh-huh.
And it just hit me. And, you know, once somebody started talking about it, it only took 5 or 10 minutes for me to realize that, hey, I was suckered.
Yes.
That's, you know.
That could have been Bill Cooper on the shortwave, right? Maybe. Back in the day.
I don't think it was. I think it was just somebody that called in on the telephone to a talk show and started talking about a certain book. He says, if you read this book, by the time you get to page 15, you'll know that there was no moon landing. And he talked a little bit. And it wasn't really any kind of celebrity. But once it came to me, it only took a very short time for me to realize that, yeah, he's right. There wasn't a moon landing. It's not something that took me a long, long, long time to think about.
No, but a lot of
people, that they don't believe the moon landing, but they won't consider the nuclear hoax.
Mm-hmm. Daniel, would you like to be included in future discussions when we get together and convene on this issue?
Yeah, okay.
Okay, I'll keep you in the loop. So, Ray, would you like to create some parting comments on mainly the nuclear issue, if we can? Jewish-Jesuit debate any time, but I know you're big on that. But if we could just do a little nuclear summary.
Well, I mean, I accept that nukes are fraud, and so nuclear power probably is and ought to be investigated. One of my interests really is power structures. I'd like to discuss. I think there ought to be some. I look forward to an advance in mathematics or philosophy where human groups are kind of subsumed in some way. I'm sure there's a theory, a bit like evolution or gravity, just waiting to pop out, but I don't know what it is. But if I can work out something like that, that would be a good thing, in my view.
Yeah, I'd like to talk about that too.
Good.
I probably have a different approach, though.
Okay. That's fine. Well, it's nice, very nice of you to contact me and to.
Well, this was very good. Yeah, we covered a lot of stuff. I appreciate it. And I encourage people to come to radio.aberrato.info and click on episode 35 with Ray of the Rebrevisionist of the big-lies.org website. I have the link to your website. I have the link to Nuke Lies. And I have the link to... to a couple other sites, so people should visit that. And I thank both of you for joining me on the call today.
Well, thank you as well, and thanks to Dan.
Thank you.
Okay.
Glad to hear from you, Ray.
It's nice to hear from you. I'm very impressed. If you want to email me, go ahead. You can find it on the Big Lies site.
Okay. I'll try to send you some of those pictures.
Okay, no problem. Good.
All right. Thank you.
All right, thanks, guys. Good night. Good day.
Night.
Thank you for listening to Wake Up with Ab. We do this show most Saturday evenings at 8 p.m. and also on random other evenings. To be notified by email of a live show, sign up at our website, radio.aberrato.info. On there, you'll find an RSS feed and past show archives. Be sure to check out our website at aberrato.info. If you're interested in being a guest on our show, email us at ab@aberrato.info. We stream our show 24 hours a day at radio.aberrato.info/stream. We're dedicated to figuring out the world of media fakery. Since you're awake, point others to our site and give them the opportunity to see the world in a way they probably didn't know existed.